with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Then Tuesday evening begins. We've had 3 hours of tremendous independent conversation radio already today here on America's Liberal Voice, The Horn. Guy James with another tremendous show. Mark Levine, upbeat, positive, and sounding positively bubbly in the last hour. It's going to be tough to live up to, but I'll try. You know, the news broke today about what Mark referred to as the nationalization of the banks. Oh, I still chuckle about that when I think about it. Yeah, Ronald Reagan must have rotated all the way clean through to whatever the opposite is of that hole in the dirt they stuck him in California is.
Mommy, where am I?
Yeah. Yeah, we bought a chunk of the banks. We're bankers, you and me. All right, let's get busy and start giving ourselves loans that we're not going to ask anybody to repay. I'll do it for you if you'll do it for me. Okie dokie. Oh, I don't think it's going to work that way. But I do, that. There's a story ancillary to the ongoing bailout.
No, it's a rescue.
Yep, there they are on the island. Gilligan, the skipper, Marianne, the professor, Mr. and Mrs. Howell, Ginger, and the Wall Street bankers, all just waiting for a rescue. Skipper! No, but there's a story that explains the... that explains what happened on Wall Street a lot better than, with a lot more clarity than anything that comes immediately to mind. Because, well, here it is. Fascinating little thing. Headline. Wall Street donors resent being blamed by McCain. It's a Monica Langley story from Rupert Murdoch's Wall Street Journal. This is how the article begins. Senator John McCain badly needs the cash infusion and momentum from a Tuesday night fundraiser in New York. But the senator's recent demonizing of Wall Street made it tough to lure contributors, with Wall Street and corporate executives balancing their aggravation with the Republican presidential hopeful against their rising unease about his Democratic opponent. Dang! You know, just dang! Here's the Democratic Congress basically providing the money to save their hides, and they've got rising unease about, you know, that one. This is the fun part, though. The McCain campaign hopes to raise $7 million at the event at a Midtown Manhattan hotel. For $25,000, guests get a sit-down dinner and a photo with the Arizona lawmaker and his running mate, Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. Guests who pay $1,000, you know, the hoi polloi, can attend a reception. Yes, it's a reception. I can't stand the thought of having to go to that reception and rub elbows with those people, you know, the ones who could only afford $1,000. The things we sacrifice for our country. Oh, Muffy, do put on extra cologne. I'm sure it'll be positively dreadful in that room. Oh, with all of those, well, you know, those people who only have, dare I say it, seven-figure budgets. Oh, I know. No, $25,000 gets you a sit-down rubber chicken dinner and a picture with Lumpy McHoover and Bullwinkie. $25,000 gets you that. And you wonder how Wall Street got in the shape it's in. $25,000 for a photograph with a doddering old fool and a warmonger. And a dippy fundamentalist hydrocarbon queen. Ancillary to that. I think I've already used that word this evening, haven't I? Sorry. Headline from CNN Money. Stocks, no staying power. Wall Street retreats, unable to sustain historic rally with the tech-heavy NASDAQ hit hardest. Yeah. I mean, not that I got out the tattered old robe with the moon and stars on it and the magic eight ball with the crack in the view screen that says answer Hazy Ask again later. But didn't we all kind of see this coming yet? Woo-wee, boy, that's something else. That stock market, boy, I'd just come back. I tell you what. Didn't we talk about this last night? Yeah, we kind of did. No, we really did. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was down as much as 302 points today, rallying to only vomit 76 points. It was 0.8% decline. Standard & Poor's 500 index lost 0.5%. And then the NASDAQ dumped 3.5%. And that's even after they announced they were going to bail them out again. What do you reckon that means? Well, it means that those people, the same ones who like to go out and spend $25,000 for a picture of a 72-year-old cancer survivor and an Arctic tundra moose hunter, aren't very smart. You know, I'm not talking to them. This is working America. You actually work for your money, and you do a better job generally managing it than any of the Wall Street hoi polloi. No, they're not the hoi polloi. I know those were the $1,000 a plate people. Any of our Wall Street betters. You do a better job than our betters. There we go. Now we've got it. I mean, heavens to Betsy. The horn will be 3 years old a week from Friday. Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday to us. We'll be 3 years old a week from Friday. And you know what we do? We get by on less than $2,000 a month and nobody here gets paid. It's tough, but we manage. It's a struggle, but we manage. Take any of our betters from Wall Street. Any of those idiots who are willing to cough up 25 large for a photograph with a woman who shoots dogs from aircraft and drop them in the position of any of us, and they would squeal like stuck pigs. And that's really unfair to the pigs. Pigs are actually gentle, intelligent, loving animals when they're not bred for voracious cruelty. I mean, we've all seen Arnold Ziffel on Green Acres on the reruns, right? Some of us are old enough to have actually watched it when it was still originally on the air. We know how smart pigs can be. So that's unfair. But really, Don't feel too bad about the $250 billion nationalization using your money to bail out the banks. Don't feel bad about that. Those people are pathetic, the people that run the banks. Not very smart at all. And really, when it comes right down to it, they're rather like hothouse flowers, aren't they? They can't survive in the wild. You and I, we, us, working America, the America that actually carries that class on our backs, we're survivors. We know what it is to get through day to day. We know how to make the hard choices between, car repairs and food, medicine and food, paying the power bill or paying the water bill. We know how to get from month to month with hopefully a modicum of disaster. Those people, not so much. They've got to have our assistance. They can't live without it. Oh, sure, they have things that you and I wouldn't know what to do with. They have their yachts. They have their paintings. They have their fine silver. They have their 8, 10, 12, 13 cars like the McCains. They have lots of those things. But virtually everything to do with getting along in day-to-day life, they have someone else to do for them because they themselves are incapable. So don't be too resentful of the fact that the government is using your future to prop up the helpless class. They are America's less fortunate. They were born with less brains, less initiative, less stick-to-itiveness, less genius, less ingenuity. And if it wasn't for us, they would perish and die. And I don't think any of us want that on our conscience now, do we? Not I. Not I. So, tomorrow we'll probably have another little rally and then another little on Wall Street. And maybe we'll have an update on how many idiots showed up with their checkbooks open to the tune of $25,000 a pop for a photograph of a woman who can't even manage to keep her 17-year-old from getting pregnant by a guy who is now a high school dropout. Wouldn't that be interesting? I mean, personally, I think everybody who goes and writes that $25,000 check, we should double their taxes. It's kind of like the lottery. What do they say about the lottery? The lottery is an involuntary tax upon, or it is a voluntary tax upon the stupid. And as a player of the lottery, I freely confess it. Well, we need an involuntary tax upon the stupid who write the $25,000 checks for Lumpy McHoover and the woman from Wasilia, Alaska. Only seems kind of fair, doesn't it? I mean, we've got to have a little help carrying them along. Also from the CNN Money story, the Treasury Department unveiling details of the $700 billion bailout plan approved earlier this month, said today it'll pour $250 billion directly into the nation's banks in a dramatic move meant to stabilize the flailing financial system, the financial system that's run by those idiots who pay $250,000 a plate for a picture. Color glossy photograph with a pair circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one. 9 of the largest banks have already agreed to participate. The government will buy preferred shares in the banks and hold those shares until the market stabilizes and then sell them back to the banks. And supposedly the program also limits executive pay. Now, that is the place where this crowd is intelligent. They'll find a way around that. And Dim Leader also wants another $100 billion of the $700 billion to go to that crowd, too. As of October 27th, the Fed is set to start buying up all the bad paper that this godforsaken Repiglican administration helped hang all over the planet. Hey, it's the Bush way. They screw up and somebody else cleans up the mess. Nice work if you can get it, huh? And, oh, by the way, from the squirrely headline department, this from over at CNN.com, it's a tragic story. But, Lord, please, send these people. Could somebody please send these people to a remedial English class? Starving girl, 14, found weighing 48 pounds. Now, there's a tale of American determination. Here's a 14-year-old girl. She's starving. And someone found her weighing 48 pounds. First of all, from the journalism department, we don't know what she was weighing 48 pounds of. But obviously, even at 14 years old and starving, she was still trying to carry her weight, weighing 48 pounds of something. After that, she weighed 16 pounds of something and 72 pounds of something, standing there at the scales just weighing stuff. Obviously, you know what the poor child weighed 48 pounds when they found her. And yes, she's 14 years old. And it's a horrifying story. Made, in a way, more so by virtue of the fact that the grammatically challenged at Chicken Noodle News, member of the for-profit media, can't quite get the headline written in such a way that it doesn't butcher the language and minimize the story. So, yeah. Now, before, and by the way, you know, as ever, your phone calls are welcome, 304-658-3333 on your nickel. On ours, we'll be happy to pay the freight at 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email rolls in to bob@headonradio.com. Now, there's a little something else before we do go to the phone calls, if that's what you want to do this evening. And it's a little story. I'm just proud as punch to see the success that Rachel Maddow is having. Because unlike me, she's very, very civil. She is very, like most liberal commentators, far more intelligent than the other side. After all, the other side of the crowd that write checks for $25,000 photo opportunities with a woman whose favorite food is moose stew. But anyway, no, she's brilliant. She's personable. And I'm just, like I said, proud as punch of the success that she's having at MSNBC. But, you know, you can take the boy out of the South, but you can't take the South out of the boy. And I say that applying it to myself. And I got to tell you. Now, I know, she's Rachel Maddow is a strong woman, capable of standing up for herself, more than strong enough, independent, doesn't need any of that old chivalry business. But you know what? I want to, you know who David Frum is? David Frum is the right-wing creep who helped destabilize the planet early in the days of the first term of Dim Leader by coining the phrase Axis of Evil and inserting it into one of those little screeds that Dim Leader delivered early on. Now, he showed up on, he showed up on Rachel Maddow's show. And I got to tell you, I want to punch this guy in the face so bad that the spit flies. You know, one of those great stop action sports photo shots of the great boxing matches where, you know, where Ali's fist is just striking the guy's jaw and his head's going wah, and the spit's about 3 feet ahead of where the guy's head's going to wind up. That. Because, you know, this dirty little bastard was just rude to Rachel Maddow. And I don't approve of it. And I don't, it really does. This kind of conduct brings out the absolute worst in me. He showed up, as I said, on Rachel Maddow's show Monday night on MSNBC. And the topic was the vile, red meat, hateful, race baiting and racism and incitement to violence that the McCain campaign has become. The only thing was, David Frum, this man who helped to throw a lighted match into the sea of gasoline that is the Middle East. Well, he got kind of, and I don't want to start using the fun words this early in the programming. We do have free speech here on the inner tubes, but I don't want to do it. Let's say that he got rather incivil himself with Rachel Maddow.
Joining us from Washington, David Frum, former speechwriter for President Bush, columnist for the National Review Online, and a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Mr. Frum, it's a real pleasure to have you here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You have publicly stated some reservations about John McCain and some criticisms of the way his campaign has run, even though you've also said that you will vote for him. One quote I wanted to ask you about. You said that those who press this William Ayers line of attack are whipping Republicans and conservatives into a fury that's going to be very hard to calm after November. What do you mean by that in that word fury?
Well, I think you were talking through much of the show about the matter of tone in our politics. And yet, I think we are seeing an intensification of some of the ugliness of tone that has been a feature of American politics in the past 8 years. I mean, the show, unfortunately, is itself an example of...
You catch that? We'll pick right back up. She's asking him, and you heard the lead-in, rock solid, straight. Nothing over the top, no screaming, no hollering, no name-calling. Far more mature than I will ever be. And this little punk-ass bastard tells Rachel Maddow that she's part of the problem. No, really. We'll pick up a little bit before I broke in.
8 years. I mean, the show, unfortunately, is itself an example of that problem with its heavy sarcasm and sneering and its disregard for a lot of the substantive issues that really are important. And I would hate to see Republicans go probably into opposition sustaining this terrible cycle of unseriousness about politics, about turning it into a spectator sport. The party is going to have some important rebuilding to do. It's going to have to do that in an intelligent way, and we're all going to have to do better than we've been doing, including in the past 40 minutes.
Including in the past 40 minutes. Now, this guy writes for the National Review. There is no more loathsome, no more partisan, no more vitriolic publication in the country, short of, World Nut Daily or Newsmuck, than the National Review. Blech. But no, it's the last 40 minutes of this program. Daggummit, this guy has the blood of something in excess of 100,000 to perhaps a million innocent Iraqis on his hands. And he has the gall to tell Rachel Maddow? Sweet? Genial? Even-handed? Wouldn't say poop if she had a mouthful, Rachel Maddow, that she's part of the problem?
Who think that my tone on this show is equivalent to people calling Barack Obama somebody who pals around with terrorists, people yelling from the audience at McCain-Palin rallies, bomb Obama, kill him, off with his head, traitor. Are you accusing me of an equivalence in tone?
I don't think that's an important question. I think the question is, given the small plate of responsibility that you personally have, how do you manage that responsibility? The fact that other people fail in other ways is not an excuse for you failing in your way.
But you did just say it's the same thing, that you're seeing the same thing from this show in the last 40 minutes.
I worry about that. I hope that my party, as it probably goes into opposition, will do better. And I hope that when we are looking at, in the next cycle of politics, that we will see that the quality of discussion is more thoughtful, that the substance is more important, and that questions like whether or not North Korea is a terrorist state and belongs on that list can be discussed on their merits and not on what they tell us about the gamesmanship of politics.
Now, I'll wait just a minute. Just to give you a little bit more background on David Frum. I'm not going to sit here and say that he was so loathsome as a baby that his mama had to tie a pork chop around his neck just to get the dog to play with him or anything like that. Because we have facts. We have clear, documented facts about David Frum and this tone that he's so concerned about. When House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, no liberal by any stretch of the imagination, at least not in my book, when she visited Syria, David Frum was part and parcel of the smear campaign against her for doing so. Everything from the business about whether or not she put on a hijab, you know, a headscarf, to whether or not she had any business leaving the kitchen, let alone the Congress of the United States. That's what this bowl floater has done. He also opined of Al Gore that Mr. Gore ought, and this is a quote, ought to seek out for his own good a cool and quiet darkened room, because maybe a National Psychological Council would be a good idea after all. This kind of milquetoast, smarmy, sickening conduct from the right wing, where once they get called on their hate, they say, you know, we want to change the tone. You're right. The tone is poisonous. You have him on the show to talk about the poison that's coming out of the McCain campaign. You know, you're right. The tone is poisonous. Why are you people, why are you Democrats making everything so poisonous? And he's able to get away with it largely as a direct and proximate result of the complicity of the for-profit media. So let's pick up a little bit more of the colloquy.
On the thoughtfulness issue, though, I wonder if part of the problem in the way that we haven't moved through these things, we decry them on all sides. People left, right, and center complain about the tone in politics. But I sense also that there's a devotion to coming up with a sort of false equivalence. The idea that bringing up John McCain's experience in the Keating Five, for example, is somehow equivalent to calling Barack Obama somebody who pals around with terrorists. You saying that my tone on the show, sarcasm, being playful, the way that I approach issues, would be somehow equivalent to the McCain campaign, I'm guessing, saying they don't want to talk about the economy. I don't see those things as equivalent.
I'm just suggesting, the line is often attributed to Mahatma Gandhi, I don't know if it's really his, that we should be the change we want to see, or that we say we want to see. And so if we want to have a more intelligent, more grown-up politics,
my poor little pumpkin head's going to explode. Like I said, here's a guy with the blood of anywhere between 100,000 and a million innocent civilians on his hands, quoting Gandhi. Let's go back to the thing while I just try to let the steam come out of my ears for a little bit before I open the microphone again and start saying the fun words.
I think we all say that, then we ought to do it. And if we're given the opportunity to do it, we should do it. I mean, that you raise a very interesting point about the question of arming these militias in Afghanistan. I was just there for a little more than a week with a NATO mission. We spent a lot of time talking about that question. It's a really important question and a really hard one. And it does demand some of the best thinking we can do, because there is a war going on that the United States has, it's a commitment, it's a war, it's not going well, we've got a major financial crisis, and I absolutely...
Who's responsible for that? Honest to Pete! It's the Rachel Maddow tone problem! That's why the war in Afghanistan that you started... Helped start. Let's be fair. Helped start. That's why. Yeah. So we're going to talk about the failed war in Afghanistan instead of the fact that John McCain and Sarah Palin are out on the stump calling for the lynching of Barack Obama. Off with his head. Kill him. Little creepy little guy in the video. If you go over to... Brave New Films, and look at their latest video about the McCain hate fest, the McCain-Palin hate fest. Yeah, you'll see a little video footage of a little McCain troll holding up a monkey doll. His name's Hussein. He's got a little Obama sticker on top for a hat. Yep, Rachel Maddow's fault. You betcha. Sure.
Am concerned and unhappy about the kind of campaign my party has been running, and I'm doing my best to try to raise the tone, my little best, and to urge that we do better. We talk more substantively. I think we should all do that. It would be better for everyone.
I didn't intend for my interview with you to be about this, but because you raised it, I feel like I've got to talk to you about it. And I guess when you say that you want the discourse to be more grown up and more intelligent, I agree with you on intelligent. I don't necessarily agree with you on grown up. I think there's room for all sorts of different kinds of discourse, including satire, including teasing, including humor. There's a lot of different ways to talk about stuff in Americans.
Sorry to interrupt you there, Rachel, dear. But it's really all about the definition of grown up now, isn't it? Remember what they said when the Bush administration was coming into office? The grown-ups were in charge now? Some of those freaks referred to themselves as the Vulcans? Remember that? I remember that. Grown-ups. Really? If being grown-up is starting a war with a nation that had done nothing to you, if being grown up means firing guided missiles and dropping so-called smart bombs on the huts of peasants who have no interest whatsoever in the United States or world politics or Iraqi oil or Saddam Hussein, for that matter, if that's adulthood, if that's what being a grown-up means, Mr. Frum, then I am happily working on my second childhood, because I want none of your grown-upness. Lord Almighty. Check in on the email bag real quick. This from our pal Cindy. Thinking about our betters. The thought that the rich might lose their financial footing in this global scheme to live passively off the labor of others kind of gives new meaning or clarity to the meek inheriting the earth, doesn't it? I can't wait. The world would be better off if these folks crashed. By the way, you must be aware that this is nothing more than a stick-up of our nation by the chief bank robber, G. Bush. Right? That's why I've been saying it's a heist all along. Then on from sneering, vitriol, can you say Clinton impeachment? We got nothing but from these guys in their sustained vitriol for 10 years during the 1990s. It's payback, people. Keep it up, and we won't back down. Here here. And, you know, payback is a, you know what. But look for more of this. Look for more deflection. Look for more obfuscation. Look for more mendacity. Because these are, after all, Republicans. Whether they're saying, well, you know, George Bush just didn't turn out to be the conservative. He fooled us, too. Whether it's that or, you know, the only way to save America is to cut taxes on the richest 0.1% of the people in this country. That's how we'll save America. Or whether it's trying to project the vicious, vicious, pernicious, hate-filled, racist, bigoted, malevolent rhetoric of the Palin-McCain campaign, because, you know, she really is running the show now when you get right down to it. It's what Republicans do. This is their world. This is their modus operandi. Admit nothing, deny everything, and whatever you're accused of, make sure that you accuse the other side of being the real culprit. Why am I not surprised? Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mom.
Hey!
It's Amber.
That's what I thought.
Sorry, I'm getting closer to the phone now.
Okay, all better.
There. I never know when you're actually going to get to me, and so I'm trying to get in the chat room as well. But anyway, this isn't really related, but I thought any people would want an update.
Okay.
On me.
Okay.
I'm not coughing up a lung anymore, except at night I still have trouble with it sometimes. And I emailed the K2 News people, and they told me to get a copy of the insurance, because remember, I told you my insurance wouldn't pay for my medicine. So I'm still waiting for the copy of the insurance. But they said that if they're still going to deny me after I read the copy and come in armed, then they'll help me.
Wonderful.
So they just want me to come in armed. And, oh, I have a little bit of a voting update for anybody else with disabilities. I got a little bit of a scare today because I got in the mail something from the voters registrar that told me that I needed to register to vote again. And I'm like, what? I already did. It turns out that because I'm disabled and my signature is all weird,
mm-hmm.
you know, I kind of write like a first grader. They thought that I was trying to forge somebody else's signature. So I had to call them and prove to them that it was me, that I'm just disabled. I had to have one of my caregivers call them and say, yes, she is disabled. And they said, well, you should get one of those stamps. Apparently there's a stamp that counts for your signature. You can get a stamp that's your legal signature. I didn't know that before.
I didn't either, but it would still be a stamp of your signature, and it seems to me they'd still be subject to questioning it.
Well,
if
see, that's what I'm scared of, because if you get one of those stamps that just has your name all neatly printed, you know,
mm-hmm.
somebody could steal that, or you could drop it or lose it, and then you'd be really screwed.
Yeah, you would.
That would be your official signature, and there'd be no way to prove that you're the one that actually put it on the piece of paper. So I think I'll stick to my chicken scratch.
I think that's probably the best course for you.
I had to like argue with these people for like an hour to try to prove to them that I'm really disabled. Finally, it was like, do you want me to take a picture of myself in my wheelchair? But I wanted to say thank you, because I've gotten a lot of comments and emails and comments in the chat room about supporting me and everything like that. And I've never really had that before from a group of strangers, so.
Well, you stick around long enough, Amber, and strangers they will not be. We've never met a stranger in the headonradionetwork.com chat room, I can assure you of that.
Well, I'm glad to be part of the group now, and I wanted to know How is the lady that's been in the hospital doing?
She is doing quite well. She went home today, ELO, Sue did. And she's been in the chat room a little bit today, although Agnes saw that she was in there and said, what's she doing? She's not supposed to. And I asked her, she said, she's not supposed to be out of bed. And I said, honey, she's on the laptop. Oh, okay. Well, that's all right then. Just not too much of it.
Yeah, because I've been worried about her. And anyway, sorry I didn't have anything of substance to say, but I just wanted to update people because I know people have been wondering. So.
But Amber, wait a minute, Amber. You did have something of substance to say. This is of substance. This is what you had to say is the substance of which this network is made.
Well, okay. I just meant, like, not about Rachel Maddow or anything like that.
Look, no, that's the way terrestrial commercial radio works. We go all over the place. We'll talk about anything that anybody wants to bring to the table. So don't you ever hesitate to pick up the phone, okay?
Okay, well, I just wanted everybody to know, and I wanted to say thank you. And the moral of the story is always have a copy of your insurance policy, and if you're on the bottom of society, try not to get sick, I guess.
Well, that's the absolute truth. This is a terrible country to get sick in. And the other thing, anytime that they deny you anything, Amber, whether it's cough syrup or pain medication or, you know, a trip to a specialist, anything, anytime that you are denied anything by a healthcare provider, make them put it in writing.
Yeah, don't they have to tell you why?
It varies from state to state, Amber.
Okay.
Because virtually all insurance laws and rules and regulations are dealt with at the state level.
Okay.
Okay. Well. And by the way, Nanette and Cobwebs in the chat room are sending big hugs to you right now. So.
Oh, okay. I'll be there in a second. It's just hard to do both at once.
I understand. Amber, good to hear from you, dear.
All right. I'll talk to you again soon, I promise.
Okay, great. Talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye.
Doesn't matter where you are. That's part and parcel of it. Maybe that's part. Is that part of the undercurrent that's running, that we're sick to death of being told no? You can't, we won't, thou shalt not. And we are on, is it possible that we could be on the verge of a popular mandate that actually starts giving a damn again about the people who do carry this country on their backs? The working class? The people who actually make this country go? In one form or another, as opposed to the people who pay $25,000 a plate for dinner and a photograph with a woman who thinks she can see Russia from her house. Is that possible? Dare we hope it? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. This is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita.
Yeah, first of all, I want to say I forgot the other day to thank Amber for pronouncing the word pharmaciate.
Oh, yes.
I know, but
I still say the belly full's fine by me.
couple of things. I love Rachel Maddow. I started listening to her from first time she was on Air America, and they put her all over the place. She's very brilliant, and she studies every day. And that guy was so condescending, but what can you expect?
Well, exactly. That's what these people are.
Yeah.
And the minute you call them on it, I mean, honest to God, if these people were common street thugs holding a stolen television set in their arms, and you said, you know, why are you holding that television set? They'd look at you, you know, with that innocent little face with their arms heavy with television and say, what TV set? Oh, this one? Oh, yeah.
I know yesterday on The View, they they were all there except Barbara, and they were talking about Whoopi was trying to bring up that everybody had people that they had associated with, you know, the, you know, that we all, you know, have associated with somebody, even if it was just a fleeting moment or something. And they went through all the discussion, you know, and everybody's, yeah, yeah. And then, you know who? But.
Yeah, oh, sweet little Elizabeth.
But, yeah, but.
Elizabeth Butt? Yeah.
Yeah. But he was, he really was with that. Golly. But anyway, they had, she wasn't there today. Elizabeth wasn't, but they had another one from Fox, I guess. But
you mean they actually brought brought in a substitute wingnut?
Yeah. She seemed to have a little more sense, but anyway.
Well, if she's a wingnut, that won't last, Juanita.
Well, she was blonde.
I thought they all were.
But, yeah, it seems like it, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, that's where the phrase comes from, you know, right-wing attack blonde. Ann Coulter, Laura Ingraham.
Concentration guards.
Yeah, once upon a time, what's her name, Barbara Olson was an attack blonde.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Is she really dead?
Well, Ted's kind of worried about that, seeing how he was dating another woman inside of a couple of days after the plane went into the Pentagon. But nah, that's,
oh, yeah?
That's catty of us to mention now, isn't it?
Yeah. She and that woman that's on the McLaughlin group, now, they favor to me.
Oh.
They really look alike.
I know who you're talking about. I can't come up with a name.
Is it Crawley? Something like that.
Oh, Crowley, yeah. Oh, Monica Crowley?
Yeah, I think so, something like that.
Yeah.
I used to see all them on Bill Maher's show when he was on ABC. And, boy, I'll tell you something else. There was some men, too, who were real jerks. But...
Well, you know, that's why there's a pig-licking party. It's somewhere for the horses' rear ends to congregate.
Ah, yes. But, I wanted to tell you that last night, I guess it was, I saw your governor debating.
Oh, yeah.
The Republican running mate. Did you see it?
Oh, I did not see it, but I knew it was taking place. You're talking about.
Yeah, I didn't see the first part, but
Joe Manchin versus, yeah, Joe Manchin versus the Repiglick and eighth grade dropout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were asking them about the, workers' rights law, or is that the right name of it?
Oh, yeah, right to work, or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And your governor said, oh, no, you know, like that would upset the apple cart, you know.
Well, and
all these businesses coming in. But the Republican guy said, well, he would consider it.
Well, they're both, when you get right down to it, they're both very anti-worker. It's just that Joe Manchin knows that he can't get reelected without working people, so he changed his tune on that. If he was living in a perfect world, I'm sure he'd put a shiv in working folks' back. But he wanted to be governor worse than he wanted to screw working people. So thus far, it's at least worked out moderately well on that end. Now, when it comes to things like workers' compensation, not so much. He privatized it, and it's turned out to be a great big nightmarish boondoggle.
Well. How is your workers' comp there? I don't know if they're the same all over the country, but ours, you have to go through the government.
Well,
it's all
what
government control?
What we had is we had a state-run workers' compensation system, Juanita.
Yeah.
And it worked like a charm for years and years and years until this right-wing Repiglican thug, really, I mean, he's a convicted felon, a guy named Arch Moore. I mean, Arch Moore is so crooked, Juanita, that when he dies, they won't be able to bury him. They'll have to screw him into the dirt. he took, and he got busted for extorting bribes from coal companies, that kind of thing. You know, typical Repig-looking behavior.
Yeah.
What he did is he sold out workers' compensation to his coal operator buddies that put West Virginia's workers' compensation system into a permanent hole in the ground.
Mm.
And the deficits kept piling up and piling up and piling up until Joe Manchin came along and he said, hey, everybody, here's a great idea. Let's privatize workers' compensation. That'll fix it. And what it did, well, you know, and it did fix things for a small handful of people. One guy who was making a, you know, a little government salary suddenly became the president and CEO of this company. The next thing you know, he's got, you know, got a highfalutin salary, and they're having out-of-state junket meetings, and they got themselves a fancy new building on some of the most expensive real estate in Charleston, West Virginia. Oh, yeah, it worked out great for him. For working people, not so much. It's a lot harder to get permanently a permanent disability rating in this state now, and you have to fight them twice as hard to get coverage. But, you know, like I said, it's just a typical route that privatization takes.
Well, was that just with one insurance company?
Well, that's the thing. Workers' compensation was a state-run organization. And
but when they privatized,
right, they turned it into one company and gave them a monopoly for a period of years.
Well, we've had it like years ago. It used to be, I used to work in the insurance, you know, part of the hospital, and you just call up the company and they say, yeah, we got workers' comp, and you know, then you check with the insurance company and you were fine. But then they turned it over to the government and the way they ran it. See, we've had the Republicans in control for a long time. And personal experience, I didn't get a dime from workers' comp when I got hurt. Not one dime. And I had a lawyer that treated me like I was just dirt. And anyway, it's just not a good system. A lot of people have gotten bad treatment from it. I mean, I wasn't hurt to where I couldn't get around, you know.
Oh, no.
Like some people are. But nevertheless, you know, I don't know. That's why I wondered.
Well, just by example, one of the folks in the chat room is just typed into the chat room. She said, my husband's been disabled, and we're talking about a West Virginian. My husband's been disabled since 1996 and has never gotten his workers' compensation.
Yeah. Well, I can relate to that. I'll tell you. In fact, I even had one lawyer that told the judge he couldn't locate me, and I've lived here like 30-something years or more.
Well, but he was probably telling the truth. If you don't try to locate someone, by definition, you can't locate them.
Right. Absolutely. And I, when I would call the office, his office, you know, they'd say, well, you just have to be patient. We'll let you know.
Yeah, patient.
But anyway, I'm glad to hear about ELO, Sue.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm praying for her.
Well, a lot of people have been. And
it's chronic pain is not so fun.
Well, no, and what... Well, what she wound up getting fixed, apparently, her mama said she hasn't felt this good in months. So
I heard her mother. Yeah.
So hopefully they got it licked, we're glad to see her back at the back in the chat room.
She's always been so helpful and so nice.
Oh yeah.
You know, to me and everything, and I'm sure everyone, but you know, I think she's special.
She's absolutely a rock and a core of the Horn family.
Mm-hmm.
And the chat room and so much of what we do wouldn't be the same without her participation. The chat room was a different and lonelier place without her these last several days. There's no getting around that. But we're just waiting for her to get to feeling better and get back to herself, and then we'll give her the coffee breaks over back on your head speech, and you know how that goes.
Okay, well my mind is going blank, so I guess.
All right, well Juanita, good to talk to you, dear.
And God bless Amber, because, oh, Lord, sometime you have to go through the mill. I just hope it gets settled soon.
I know. You take care and have a great evening.
You too, Bob.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Which reminds me, I'm sort of like a squirrel. You know, I've got the attention span of a squirrel. We may have to adjust the schedule tomorrow evening, simply because there's a local Campaign for Change meeting here on this side of the river, and I want to make sure that I get to it, because frankly I want to do what I can to make sure that Barack Obama gets elected, and I want my county to be a part of that. I don't want to have to hang my head in shame. Because, you know, in this county, it has such a majority of Democrat registration. Lord of mercy. I don't think the Repiglican Party in Fayette County, West Virginia, has enough members to hold a convention in a phone booth. And yet we're having to struggle in this county to get Barack Obama elected. I don't know if I can bear that shame. So I may be an hour late or so, but I'll tell you what, I do promise you this. We'll do 3 hours of radio tomorrow, one way or the other. But we may just start it a little bit later, or I don't know if Mark Levine is handy. Maybe he could do an extra hour if he's up to it or something like that. But we'll work it out one way or the other, but we may get a late start tomorrow evening. So just be advised, and I hope you won't hold it against me, because I try not to just sit here and be a yammerhead behind the microphone. There is, be ye doers of the word and not hearers only. Does that ring a bell with anybody? Yeah. And faith without works is dead. I know. I got too much of the book inside me. There's no getting around it. But there's truth in it. There are truths there. You don't necessarily have to buy in to the magic crackers and all of the hoopla and hootenanny to recognize that when somebody says faith without works is dead, that person was 2,000 years ago speaking truth. So I'm going to get off my big pink duff and go to this meeting and see what I can do to try to help. So I hope that'll be okay. Wow, where did the hour go? It all flies by, but there is still an abundance of stuff to talk about as we go into the next hour, and you know, as we discussed with Amber, it doesn't have to be what I bring up. This is not egomaniacal radio. And I like to think that maybe I'm sharp enough to carry on, I'm enough of a conversationalist, that we can talk about just about anything that you want to bring up. I mean, if I'm not right up to speed on it, I'll try to get there as we go. How many others will tell you that? Lord knows nobody in right-wing radio will say that. You either do, you talk about what they want to talk about, or you don't talk at all. Get in line right, exactly. So, you know the phone number. Toll free, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or 304-658-3333. Bob@headonradio.com is the email address. And we'll be right back. This is America's listener-supported, liberal voice. I have a mouthful of cotton. Nah, just kidding. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob.
we come to call with pipes and flutes and fiddles and all. In case of death, we've even brought a keener. So if you're glum and feeling down, just be like us and act a clown, and soon there'll be a change in your demeanor. Rum, dum, the doodle do, have a dee da doodle dum. Rum, dum, the doodle do, can do it on. Rum, dum, the doodle do, have a dee da doodle dum. Rum, dum, the doodle do, can do it on. I put me money on the horse today, but with the race he'd run away, or so a friend was in the know, he told me. 20 lengths ahead of most, he proudly cantered past the post, but woe with me, he lost the bloomin' jockey. Rum, dum, the doodle do, have a dee da doodle do. Rum, dum, the doodle do. Now all the places that I've seen, from China to the Caribbean, are all across the globe compared to Ireland. From Ballycastle to Tralee, the Corrib to the Liffey, there's nowhere else on earth quite like this island. In Hollywood I long to be, now not the place across the sea, but in County Wicklow, Ireland's lovely garden, where no pretenders will you find, but decent people, warm and kind, and lots of friendly sheep, and through the bargain. Warning. In the evening, in good company, with music in the key, and we'll be dancing carry sets until the morning. Rum, dum, the doodle do, have a dee da doodle do. Rum, dum, the doodle do, can do it on. Rum, dum, the doodle do, rum, dum, the doodle do, dancing carry sets until the morning.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, sir, did he? And another program note before it escapes my mind. I hope that we, because, you know, we have to do a lot of hope, and I never make promises anymore, but I hope that we'll be broadcasting live on Thursday evening from Roanoke, Virginia, from a reception for the Society of Environmental Journalists. I'll be traveling over that way one way or the other. If I'm not on the air, please forgive me, but you might want to just check in, see if we are, because if we are, might be talking to some really, really interesting folks who are keeping up with environmental news, environmental developments, and giving life to so much of the grassroots efforts that is invigorating this country, and that may be the very core of the change that so many of us are hoping for and talking about. About 6 minutes past the hour, and let's go to the phones and see who's there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Joe Vecchio here.
Hey, Joe. What's up?
Not much. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. How about you?
Oh, well, I'm still hanging in there. I've actually been trying to reach you in the off hours, but I figured you've been busy with stuff. So I thought, well, let me just call in. I'm studying for my test, and I was taking a break from that. So I thought, let me call in and let everybody know I'm still alive out here and still kicking.
What, math quiz on Friday, or what are you studying for?
This is my IT course for the
very cool
college I was telling you about. It had been put on hold for a while, but they found an instructor, and we're back up, and I take my next big test tomorrow.
Wow. Are you getting good information? You feel like you're learning stuff?
Oh, yeah. And a lot of it is stuff that I already knew, but there are a lot of terms, and there's a lot of, semantics. That I have to just pick up on. I mean, it's really not as difficult as it sounds for me, because I've been doing this stuff for, 10, 12 years or so. But, there's still stuff you can learn, because basically with me, it's computer stuff. Learn as you need to know, Yeah, I need to know something, so I pick it up.
Right.
So, but in the meantime, I've been doing that and doing job search, and this they also have a job placement program. And I hope to have some sort of IT job as soon as I graduate, which should be by the end of the year.
That's exciting, and I know you're looking forward to it, too.
Well, it's awful, and then things. And I was talking, in fact, I was just on the phone with him before I called in here. He called me up, a good friend of Thane of Fascistan, and he was talking about the latest polls coming out. And he's very optimistic. As you know, he's been predicting an Obama victory for a long time, and the polls are reflecting that. In fact, New York Times just came out with a poll that shows Obama ahead nationally, 54 to 39.
39?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and the Republicans are going crazy. They're going to try to steal this thing, but I just don't think it's going to be anywhere near close enough. The best they can do is hope to delegitimize Obama like they tried to do with Bill Clinton, but it's just not going to work. And I'll tell you, things are going to get better when Obama gets in, because people are going to be looking to the future with a little sense of hope for a change, instead of the crazies that have been running the show. I mean, he may not be the perfect liberal president that we'd all like, but he's going to do a damn good job, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I am too, and we talked about this a little bit last night on the program too, Joe. No one would be more pleased than I to see Lumpy McHoover and Mrs. Moosekiller get absolutely stricken in this plebiscite. To see them destroyed, run out of town, utterly humiliated. I mean, a 50-0 kind of affair.
Right.
On the other hand, though, I keep advising it. Well, not advising, but I keep suggesting that we not get too ahead of ourselves with this stuff. I'm one of these people. When you watch a ball game, and some, especially it used to happen a lot in college football. And then, he's running up the score. What's he do? Why can't he just tell him to pull back a little bit? The defense's job is to stop the offense. The offense's job is not to give the defense a break.
Yeah, and I don't think Obama's doing that at all. I think Obama is running up the score as much as he possibly can.
And to haul out another sporting metaphor, I want to see Barack Obama do a Sonny Liston on John McCain. I mean, I want to see him standing over John McCain, begging him to get up so he can hit him some more. But that's because I'm a mean person, I guess.
Well, No, as people keep talking, oh, McCain's going to ruin his reputation with all this negative stuff. What reputation did he have anyway? You know, all his reputation was him just sucking up to reporters. That was the crux of it right there.
Yeah, he had about as much honest reputation, you know, real genuine sort of feet on the boots on the ground reputation, as a marshmallow does nutritional sustenance. And you're right. It was made up by the press, and maybe now, and you know, I think the biggest thing they could have done for us is what they have done by finally pulling the rubber mask off and showing how bigoted, how hateful, how filthy, how racist the Republican Party actually is.
Well, sure, pig people. I put that up. I put a post on my blog about that the other day. Driftglass, I think, pointed out and said, you know, there's not even any point in talking to a modern conservative anymore, because they'll just fly around in circles spewing Republican spin points and pretending that it's, you know, stuff from Lincoln's second inaugural.
And they've even made that stuff up.
So, yeah, they have nothing. And I'm looking at the electoral map. And really, even looking at the map that I have, was it pollster.com, I think it is, the Republicans would have to win every single toss-up state, and a bunch of these toss-up states are leaning much more heavily to Obama now, and turn a few of the blue states red again in order to have even a chance of winning. And it's just not going to happen. It's absolutely not going to happen.
I'm okay with everything except the absolutely.
I'm pretty certain. I mean,
play to the last echo of the whistle, Joe.
Well, it just looks like it's not even going to be close. I mean, I can't see anything happening short of somebody, you know, assassinating Obama. Okay.
That's just another one of those things, the little ugly things whispered into the ear of the universe. Because, you know, these people are out there, and it's real, Joe, it's real. These people are out there screaming, kill him, and off with his head, and bomb Obama. We may have budget problems, but I would not have the first qualm if one of the first things that happens if Obama gets into office is to treble the size of the Secret Service.
I don't know if he's going to do that. I don't believe he's going to do that.
I don't think he will either. I think he's brave. He's not a cowering pissant like George W. Bush. He's not going to be afraid of the American people, but there still is a substantial portion of the American people who are terrified of him because, well, you know.
Well, he's that one.
He's that guy. Yeah,
that one. That guy, yeah. I'm voting for that one, man. That's who I'm voting for. That's all I'm saying. And yeah, you're right, they're crazy, and you don't know what they're up to. And I don't think he has to trouble the Secret Service in order to do that, but let's hope that the Secret Service is doing their job and not saying, well, we got a guy that we don't particularly like. So, but I don't think that's going to happen. And I think if they do that, if they do, you know, manage to accomplish that, like with John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and MLK, I think, you know, look, I know people who are nice, friendly people who are looking up how to make Molotov cocktails. You know what I'm saying? People would be seriously angry. You know,
right.
And I've gotten to a point where I'm saying things to myself that I really shouldn't even be saying, and I won't repeat on the air because these people are just so hateful.
But I do, I do. I want the, I want
to bring this country down.
I will take as they say, a miss is as good as a mile, and I'll take a 1-point victory or a 50-state victory because they all go in the win column. But it would be nice to have a resounding defeat of John McCain so that we can look at the Republican Party and say, you idiots have been, you know, you're worse than a stopped clock because a stopped clock is right at least twice a day.
Right.
So, but you know, you guys have been patently, consistently, unutterably, dreadfully wrong. Now it's time for you to sit down and shut up and let the people who are actually capable of fixing things fix them. We're willing to do the work, but y'all have to get out of the way.
I was telling Thane about that the other day. He said, what we need is when the Democrats get enough seats in the House and in the Senate, what they ought to do is make all the Republicans sit in high chairs on their committees. You know, put little bibs on them and little baby hats on them and let them sit there and, you know, give them a little rubber nipple and let them suck on that. You know, because the way they treated the Democrats when the Republicans were in power was just unconscionable. And, you know, Nancy Pelosi, and she could have been doing a much better job. She's announcing a huge stimulus package right after the election. And hopefully it'll help guys like me out. Because, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm still living on unemployment and food stamps. And what happened was a couple of months ago, the food stamps went from $81 to $10 because they said, well, you had an extra paycheck this month. And then the month after that, because they were switching over to a new year, I lost 1 week of unemployment benefits. And because of that, you know, a couple of things bounced in the bank, and you know what the overdraft charges are. So I'm sitting here. I didn't pay my phone bill last month. I'm not going to be able to pay it this month. So I'm sitting here facing that, and I can't raise any money from anybody because everybody else is in the same boat as I am. You know, and I want that to stop. And I think a lot of people in this country want that to stop. And I think when Obama gets in, there's going to be a big change just in emotion. People will feel more comfortable about investing in new things because they'll have a glimmer of hope for the future.
And that's another thing we were talking about. Albert called in from Wisconsin last night, Joe, talking about some of the technological advances that are being made that we have a chance to capitalize on if we have the desire to do so. And that kind of stuff really can change lives. I've got a story here that News Ninja Gene sent me that I hope to get to later in the evening. Just a neat little story about a new kind of wind turbine. All these things. You know, we can have a green reinvigoration of the American economy. If we want it, and if we're willing to work for it, and if we are willing to demand it of our elected representatives. By the way, John Fox just sent me a PM from the chat room telling me to say hey to you from him.
Hi, and he's there in the chat room. Hi, John, and hi, Cossack, and everybody there in the chat room. I dropped in just before I called in here. I don't get on there as much as I should. And actually, I haven't shown up there in quite a long time, and I apologize for that. I'm just racking my mind trying to get my own life together right now. You know, ever since I was forced to sell off a lot of my audio equipment just to pay some back rent, I've been in kind of a depressed state and just trying to work my way out of it. And once I get a job and once I get things a little more settled around here, because I was doing the math in my head, even a minimum wage job would be doing me a lot better than what I got going on now, because my overhead is much lower than what it used to be. But even that, unless I get just a little bit of an injection here and there, I'm basically working on a fixed income.
Sure. And that's what I was talking about at the top of the program, Joe.
All right.
We actually know how to live this way, and we are much, much more successful at surviving than the people who drove Wall Street into the dirt.
Oh, sure, because they wouldn't know how to live like I live. They'd be jumping out windows. But here's the difference between me and other people like me and people like them. I recognize that even as bad off as I say that I have it, and I'm not saying it's great by any stretch of the imagination, there are still people a lot worse off than I am, okay? Because I see a lot of homeless people. I live in a, you know, what you would call a very, very poor neighborhood, and I see a lot of people here who are homeless, who are not really, and I hate to put it this way, but obviously there's something mentally wrong with them that they're never going to be able to work. So they're never going to be in a position where they can improve themselves financially. I at least have the, what's the word, the potential. It may be a lot of wasted potential at this point, but at least I have the potential to rise above this. So I recognize that I'm still better off than most people. But that doesn't mean to say that things have to stay this way, you know?
Yep, I do know.
And I want things to get better. And what I keep saying is I want things to get better for the pig people, too. What they don't understand is that I don't care if they're morons, and I wrote a post on this, you know, many years ago. The difference between the Republicans and the Democrats is that the Republicans want them to be miserable, poor morons. I want them to be happy and prosperous morons, okay? And they'd be better people for it, and we'd be a better country for it. Because, I really do believe if you should raise all boats. And what's been happening is that the water level's been going up, and the poor people are having their boats tied to the docks and forced under while everybody else floats.
Right. Or to take it a step further, a rising tide lifts all boats, but you're kind of screwed if you don't have a boat.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, and again, the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats is that the Republicans believe in politics and for personal gain. And the Democrats, while there are certainly people who are ambitious, see, have a different view of what government is and what it does. For them, it's all about how much can I, you know, how much can I grab and how long can will it last? And they've been robbing, you know, and all this talk about, you know, people talk about welfare queens and all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. I keep thinking that, you know, and I keep knowing, because it's the truth, that the real parasites are the top 1% of the country who take all the wealth. What is the top 1% worth about 30-40% of the nation's value now? That they take all the
wealth, in excess of 50.
They don't do anything with it. Government gives subsidies to these big corporations in part to create jobs, but the big corporations don't create jobs with that money. They take it and they pour it into political action committees to lobby the government for more tax breaks and more subsidies. And that's what's going on. And they're the ones that are getting the benefit of it. The American worker's getting nothing.
But
that's going to change.
Yeah, to go back to another metaphor, you forever hear in the right wing, you know, conservatives talking about, well, you know, we want people, all you got to do is lift yourself up by your own bootstraps.
Yeah.
You know, BS on that. Going back to the boats analogy, what do you do if you ain't got no boots? Well, you know, we want you to lift yourself up by your own toenails.
Yeah.
That hurts.
Horatio Alger. He can do it, anybody can. Well, he was kind of a fictional character, wasn't he? Well, if he can do it, anybody can.
Yeah, right.
You know, by the way, have you noticed all the Republican heroes are all fictional?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the conveniently remolded for his... the following is a hysterical reenactment. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and, or like, you know, like John Wayne. You know, I believe in war, but I'm not going to fight. You know?
Well, listen here, Pilgrim. I made a very stirring movie about the Vietnam War.
That, you know, my sons are not going to fight in, you betcha.
Yeah, or Mel Gibson, whose daddy ran him off to Australia to avoid Vietnam. Sure.
Hmm. Easy for them. And I was just telling the thing earlier on the phone. I said, you know, all this talk about, you know, the war in Iraq. We would have gone there. We could have probably run over the whole country if all the Republicans who said they supported the war actually signed up and fought in it. Young Republicans and the college Republicans.
We could have overrun the entire Indochina Peninsula.
Yeah, but they're cowards, and they always will be cowards. And, that just goes to show, you know, what their moral core is, and they have no moral core. And we're tired of them running the country, and it's all going to change come January. And that's what I'm looking forward to, and I think a lot of people are just waiting on that. This whole stuff with the stock market, it went up 900 points the other day, but I'm still thinking, that's really, you know, it's still crazy. You know, it goes down 900 points, it goes up 900 points, you know, that's people not knowing what's happening.
Well, I was thinking about that the other day, Joe. It's the Wernher von Braun theory of market economics. You remember that old rhyme from one of those comedy albums? The rocket goes up. I don't know where it. I don't care where it comes down. It's not my concern, says Wernher von Braun.
Mm-hmm.
That's Wall Street. They don't care where it comes down or how it comes down because, you know, by God, working America will be there to put them on our backs again, bail them out so they can do it to us one more time.
Hey, what I've been telling people for years, when the market went from 2,000 to 10,000, my salary didn't go up five times. And we see none of the benefits when it goes up, and we see all of the detriments when it goes down. Because when it goes down, people lay people off, you know, companies lay people off, and people get fired from their job, or they make less money. But when it goes up, they don't see any benefits from it. You know, the companies don't.
No, they the government.
More people are.
Right. The government talks in economic numbers. Well, the economy added 152,000 jobs last month. Well, it's 152,000 minimum wage jobs for the last 8 years. You know, the fact of the matter is, George Bush, when he mercifully leaves office on January 20th, 2009, he will leave office after 8 years, and he still hasn't caught up with what Bill Clinton did in terms of job creation.
Well, they're getting their compound ready in Paraguay, and let's hope we force them to use it. I would be perfectly happy to send him and Dick and all the other people out there who live out there. Actually, you know, I'm let me tell you about the Sarah Palin stuff. When I first saw her and first heard about some things, I am so glad that my lovely, wonderful wife Kathy was not alive to see her, because if she would have heard about this thing about shooting wolves from helicopters,
oh,
I would have had to have held her down physically from going to wherever Sarah Palin was and kicking her ass. Okay, because, you know, Kathy loves wolves. And you know, through her, I learned a lot about these wildly misunderstood creatures. And they're really wonderful creatures. And the sights that I saw of them chasing them with helicopters and shooting them down, that's the kind of cowards Republicans are. That's the kind of cowards they are. And that, you know, that to me is symbolic of how they see us. And I keep referring, you know, the way the Republicans are, their core beliefs is in the fact that there are certain people who are better than you and you should shut up and do what you're told because they're better than you. That feeds on itself. And they force you in a position where you either have to become them or defeat them or destroy them. And we don't really want to do either. Guys like you and me, Bob, we're perfectly happy to live and let live. I'd be perfectly happy for George W. Bush to spend the rest of his useless, stupid life on a ranch somewhere, so long he would leave me the heck alone. But he and his people can't leave me the heck alone. He can't leave any of us alone because no amount of money is enough for them. They're like a big black hole you have to keep tossing money into. Okay? And we're sick of it. And hopefully when Obama gets in, and, you know, every poll out there is showing, and now that people are paying attention, these are the polls that we should pay attention to. Polls back in April, polls back in May, they didn't mean a damn thing. These are the polls we should start paying attention to, because now it's when people are really paying attention. And everything is going up in that direction. And we not only have to defeat the Republican Party, you're right, we have to humiliate them. We have to throw them in the back seat. And if they try anything...
Run them to ground, Joe. I'm not kidding. Run them to ground.
Give them the high chairs. I mean, that may be a joke, but I'm practically serious about it. You know, give them the high chairs. Humiliate them.
Make them transform their party. Make them throw out the fundamentalists. Make them dump the abortion issue. Make them actually participate in the republic instead of being nothing but the political arm of right wing fundamentalist terrorists and economic terrorists in the right wing of Wall Street.
And we have to delegitimize them so that they sit in the sidelines for another 70 years like they had to after 1932.
It would suit me just fine.
And I hope this time it's longer.
I'm talking about ultimately, and this is way, I am way out of league, out of line and out of my league on this. I want to see the absolute unmitigated destruction of the Republican Party as it is presently constituted. And I don't think it's un-American to say that, because after all, it was Eisenhower himself in that letter, and I'm sure you've read it, because you're widely read on this kind of stuff, Joe. It was Eisenhower himself who said that any party who talks about ending Social Security will become irrelevant. And that's exactly where the GOP is.
Sure. They tried to get it, but even with their majorities and even with all the paid windbags they have on radio and on TV, they weren't able to get rid of Social Security because people understand that it's a program that works.
And that's the next thing. I don't even know if it's on Obama's radar, but by God, we have got to have some media reform in this nation. It's got to happen, because otherwise, if there's, you know, 20 million people a day or whatever sitting there listening to right-wing filth and some drug-addled gas bag like Flimball hollering, well, he's taking us down the road to communism, my friends, when in fact it was George Bush who just, you know, nationalized and socialized the banks today. But you see what I'm saying? That's got to be, you know, I don't want to take him off the air. Well, let's back up. You know and I know that the First Amendment is a function of government. In other words, if you run around saying crazy crap, even crazy political crap, inside the workplace, your boss has a right to get rid of you, and you don't have a First Amendment complaint, because the First Amendment does not apply to him. So Flimball, you know, if he wants to prattle his BS, I guess he can prattle it.
Don't let him stand on a soapbox in a city square somewhere.
Let him sit at the end of the bar and babble on like the crazy, crazy uncle at the Thanksgiving dinner that he is. Or if nothing else, make sure, you know, the fairness doctrine. Yeah, I don't know that it'll come back. But it sure wouldn't hurt to do a little divestiture of media ownership so that people on the sane side of the debate have a chance to own a few licenses too. That's not a bad idea.
A really good point the other day where you couldn't get somebody on a TV show somewhere, say on the news, talking about say the search for extraterrestrial life. Okay, you couldn't get somebody to get on a TV show to say, well, statistically, considering the number of planets, the number of stars, the number of galaxies out there, you know, statistically speaking, there has to be some sort of intelligent life out there beyond us. If somebody says that on a TV show, they're crazy. They're crazy. Even though it's a known fact that there are billions of planets, billions of stars, God knows how many galaxies, okay, even though these are obvious, clear facts, you couldn't get anybody to say something that's statistically possible. But you can go on TV and proclaim your love for the invisible superhero that lives in the sky who will send us to a fiery, burning hell if we...
Because he loves us.
...what we're supposed to, and you know, but he loves you, as George Collins would say, you know.
Exactly.
There are people who are perfectly welcome on TV. In fact, they're welcome to own TV stations.
You know, I just, among other things, you know, I do. I really do. I've got a list, Joe, and one of them is audit all the televangelists. That's a
yeah,
nice
and
start.
I keep remembering there was a documentary I saw many years ago that Jimmy Carter was about to start doing that, and that's one of the reasons why they got heavily involved in politics, because they saw the gravy train was going to end. And then they discovered how much money you could be making writing the Social Security checks instead of stealing them from little old ladies.
Nice work if you can get it.
Dude, I'm telling you, I was reading about how some of those people operated, and if I had no conscience at all, I could make lots of money. Just memorize a few Bible verses and, you know, pretend to be one of them. I was watching that movie, Dagnabbit, the one based on the Upton Sinclair novel, the recent one with Daniel Day-Lewis. There Will Be Blood?
Yes.
Is that it?
Love that movie.
I love that movie. And just, you know, while they were both, the two main characters were both major league, I can't say the word on the air, but there was a religious guy that was far worse. Far worse.
Oh. Yeah. He was a devil, and that I don't want to spoil anything. Done now. I think I'm done now.
Well, everybody knows that other great line from that movie.
I drink your milkshake.
Just the way Daniel Day-Lewis was so brilliant in that. If you have a milkshake, and I have a milkshake, and I have a straw, and my straw goes over, and I drink your milkshake. Right from out the cup. And you know something? The Republicans have been doing just that. They've been drinking our milkshake. They've been sucking every ounce of money they can get out of us, every penny that we've got in our pockets, they've been sucking up. And we've had the wealth distribution in this country going from the very rich. We've had poor people basically subsidizing rich people as far as the taxes are concerned.
Yep.
You know, one of the things I'd like to do, one of the mean, nasty things I'd like to do, and you would hate this because you're in West Virginia and this would happen to West Virginians, but I would love to reverse the tax policy and make the southern states pay more in taxes than what they've been getting in federal government. Because you know the story. You know that they take in more federal money than they pay in taxes. They actually make money on the federal government. I would flip that around.
We could just call it reparations for what they've done to us for the last 8 years.
Sure, you know, just, and it's been going on for a lot longer than that, really. I mean, you know, it's always been the case because the southern states, quite frankly, have always been the poorest states in the nation for reason. I mean, there's not always as many resources down there, and they haven't had intelligent people, unfortunately, to manage what resources they've had. They just had this big air of superiority. In the meanwhile, they've been sucking off the government teat for all these years. And they don't recognize all the good things that liberals have done for them, even when they deny it to the last breath of their body. You know, half of them would still not have electricity these days if it wasn't for liberals.
No. I grew up in the TVA. You know, we'd still be. I would have grown up by kerosene lamplight had it not been for the TVA.
I joke to people about how old I am, saying, I was so old. I remember we didn't have electricity. We used to have to watch television by candlelight. You know.
Oh, he'll be here all week, folks. Try the video.
And there was a guy I know from Alabama in a different chat room that I go to from time to time, a non-political one, and he was bragging about how Alabama was 7-0 in college football. And I said, yes, they're undefeated in college football and number 50 in education. And he started going on and on and on.
Now, see.
You got to have priorities, Bob.
We got to have civil discussion, too. And, I mean, talking trash to an Alabamian about his college football teams, that's one step below talking about mama, Joe. And Yankees, like, you got to learn that stuff.
Well, when they pay more attention to their, you know, to their floundering economy and to the massive, I can go on and on. Well, you just get so sick of it. When football is their damn priority, I mean, come on. You know, come on. I mean, I love sports, Bob. You know, I talk about baseball in religious terms, and I even like football to a certain extent. But when you listen to these guys make it, you know, the entire crux of their life, when you listen to them talk about how, you know, it's the only thing in the world that matters, it just makes you want to strangle them. You know, it's got its place. It's got its place. But its place is not so much above everything else that you let everything slip and you let everything suffer because of it. And that's what's been going on down there for the last God knows how many years.
Well, there's a hell of a lot. No argument here. No argument at all. And that's part and parcel of changing the terms of the debate. I don't know. You know, maybe after 2 or 3 years, maybe the South can be turned around. Maybe this is the thing that turns the South around.
Oh, I have no doubt that the South can be turned around. Bob, look, there are a lot of wonderful people that I know from the South, from the years that I lived down there. And by the way, as those of you who remember listening to me for my show know, I've lived both in the South and in the Northeast. In fact, I've lived all over this country. So I can speak, at least from personal experience, okay, about the places that I've been. And I've met some wonderful people down South, and I know there are some great people there. I mean, I voted for them. I voted for Jimmy Carter. I voted for Al Gore. I voted for Bill Clinton. Those are all Southerners. And in fact, not just Southerners, but they're Southern Baptists. And you know me, Mr. Agnostic, right? So I'm perfectly capable of doing that, of saying, this. I think this person is an important person and a decent person, and I'm willing to say that I think they should, you know, be in charge of the government, or at least, you know, be president. And but a Southerner would never do that to a Yankee. And I'm actually very glad that this year there are no Southerners on either of the tickets. Well, Sarah Palin's kind of a redneck in her own way. She's a secessionist, but that's another story. But there are no people from the South on either of the tickets. And I'm very happy to see that. That's the first time in many years that's happening. And I'm glad to see even some Southern states are leaning towards Obama now, that they're getting past their racism. And you know what? I see it in the generations. Other people have been talking about it. The younger generation thinks racism is stupid, and they think a lot of the things their parents believe is just plain stupid. And it's going to change. Politically at the moment, we just need to do everything we can to marginalize their influence until we're ready to turn around. And they will be ready there, Bob. They will be ready to turn around because Southerners are decent people, and I've known some very intelligent people who live down there. But they have to turn it around, and they have to recognize, they have to reprioritize what they're doing. They can still keep their college football. No one's going to take that away from them, but they have to understand that that's not the whole of goddamn existence.
Yeah, but let's be fair. Nobody says that it is. There's not a heck of a lot of, I gotta jump to the defense of my region here, Joe. There's not a lot of, not a lot of difference between a Bama fan or a Georgia fan, or an LSU fan, or an Auburn fan. There's not a lot of difference between those people and a diehard Yankees fan.
The difference is that one is a professional ball player who makes a good living off what they do, and the other are basically slaves.
Well, they're slaves who are getting a free education. I mean, come on.
That's nowhere near worth the value of what they're bringing into the college.
No, I won't argue that point, but I'm talking about the attitude of the fans.
But you can say that about, you know, anything, really. But my point is,
I mean, look at go across the pond and consider the hardcore Manchester United fan.
Well, it's still, they don't I'm trying to place this more in context here. I think in the South they have much more of a priority on that. I mean, there are certain schools that would not exist at all down there if they didn't have a college football team. But Manchester is a professional football team, okay, for soccer. The Yankees are a professional baseball team. Their purpose is to play baseball and win baseball games. They don't do it very well lately, And, you know, I happen to hate the Yankees, as a matter of fact. But
yeah, it ain't breaking me up either.
But look, dude. As I say, I hate the Yankees. I hate the Yankees.
But then,
Yankees.
But then again, you know, look what the Braves did. I think that's all over now too.
No, I think they got some young kids coming up. But my point is, look, I'm a Braves fan. I've been a Braves fan for 30 years. Okay, I still like to watch them because they're a class team. They're a professional team. They do things the right way. But I don't make it such an important part of my life that I live or die by it. And I've seen enough people down in the South who just live and die by what their college football team is doing. And I've seen enough of their culture built around that. Dropkick Me Jesus Through the Goalposts of Life is not a song that was written by any Northerner. Okay?
No.
I mean, that's what I'm talking about. And I realize that it's an insult to some Southerners, and I apologize to that. But like I said,
yeah, because you're generalizing a little bit, because I know some pretty doggone rabid Penn State fans. Lord knows.
Michigan, the country, dude.
Huh?
It's not the city stuff.
Michigan?
That's mostly country people. You know, it's not the people in Detroit that root for these teams. It's the people outside of those areas.
Ohio State?
Same thing. Not Cincinnati, not Cleveland. Out in the rural areas.
Southern Cal?
Okay, I'll give you Southern Cal. I'll give you that one.
Yeah, and... I don't know the Detroit Free Press has pretty extensive coverage of
I know they do here in Illinois too, that they cover the Illini very well here in Chicago and all of that stuff, but it's much more of a culture that I've noticed down in South. But I think that's also partly because they haven't had as much experience with professional sports as the Northeastern states have, and that's also but again. You know, but at least the other states care about their education and they care about the other things, and you know, they do have their priorities set. And I think a lot of the southern states simply don't have their priority states set on that.
Well, some of that is structural. For instance, Alabama, Joe. I got a pretty damned fine public school education in Alabama that I would gladly put up against a lot of other public school educations from around the country. However, I got that good education because I was part of, they have this dualistic system, and they have it in other states too, where you have city versus county. You've got two school boards in any, or two, three, four, five school boards in any given county. A city school, however many metropolitan areas there are in the county, each metropolitan area has its own school system, and then there's a county school system. And it's that dichotomy that creates a lot of the educational inequity. A lot of school funding schemes are still based on antiquated property tax schedules. So that if you happen to live in a small, sparsely populated county, I don't care where, your kids don't get the educational opportunity that a kid does in the wealthier area of a more populous county. Lord God knows that's the truth here in West Virginia. My kids going to a little rural high school up here don't have a third of the curricular offerings that kids going to school at the big consolidated schools down in the state capital county have.
Well, maybe that's one of the things that has to change, Bob.
I think it would be worth looking at.
Well, I think education is one of the most important things a government can do at every level, you know, state, local, federal, you know, because you can't have a country that's not properly educated. I mean, I pull my hair out that we're still fighting this evolution battle when every other nation in the world, industrialized nation in the world, has put this past them that they don't have these fights, you know, and it needs to stop, and we need to reinvigorate. And I'm strong for that. And again, I want to apologize to the Southerners out there who think I'm just coming down on them. But the truth of the matter is that historically speaking, this is where the problem has laid. And I understand that, you know, the problems you're talking about there with money, but those are problems that need to be fixed. And those are problems that we can fix and that we can solve so that we can, you know, bring people up into the 21st century, for crying out loud. And that's the long and short of it right there. And the lack of education is why you get people, you know, screaming bloody murder about Obama this and Obama that. You know, by the way, someone made a very good point that they haven't shown very many pictures of William Ayers because they're trying to play the story that William Ayers was a black man and William Ayers was white as white.
You know, that and he doesn't, I noticed that in some instances when they do show him,
They show the old pictures of him as a 60s radical, you know, with the big curly hair out to there.
Right.
He looks like a really boring old middle-aged guy now.
Yep, and that's basically the person that Obama knew when he worked with him. And he might not even know him well on the board. There were people saying that I've been on boards, and I didn't know anybody on the board, you know. So, and it's all, you know, and they have a lot of nerve talking about guilt by association, quite frankly. You know, but that's the way they are. That's the way they have been. They have to scare people. Obama's scary. He's scary.
Oh, and in fact, I've got a...
This world? Oh, he's scary.
I've got a real nice guilt by association story in the stack for tonight, too. And guess what? It's not about Obama.
Ooh.
I mean, you want to talk about a creepy association? How about the fact that one of John McCain's primary advisors, his firm got oodles of money for illegally lobbying for Saddam Hussein?
Well, yeah. That never gets brought up because, you know, John McCain's a hero. He would never do that.
No, former POWs, they don't do that kind of thing.
You know, that was their answer to everything for a while, isn't it? You know, in fact, it was the Thane who was making jokes about that. He said, John, why are you peeing on my shoe? Well, I'm peeing on your shoe because when I was a POW, I didn't have a shoe to pee on.
Well, exactly. Yeah, this guy's name's William Timmons, Joe.
And I've heard of him.
He's a big-time Washington lobbyist, and he is the head of McCain's apparently not going to have much to do transition team. And he was part and parcel of the company and influenced the company that was where there were two lobbyists that Timmons worked very closely with for 5 years. It's not like he just went to a board meeting or a coffee klatch. 5 years they spent working on an illegal lobbying campaign. Two of them either pleaded guilty or were convicted of federal criminal charges for acting as unregistered agents of Saddam Hussein's government.
And there you go. And that's, you know, and then you take a look at that, and you got Phil Graham, who is probably as much responsible for the mess that we've gotten ourselves into financially as any single person can be. And what was her name? The other co-chair, the lady who ran Hewlett Packard into the ground.
Oh, Carly Purina. I mean Fiorina.
Yeah, and you know we haven't seen her much on the.
Yeah, well, she got paid $42 million for running HP into the ground. So.
But, you know, I mean, don't you and I wish we could have jobs like that? I mean, I had one job where I just walked off because I was so frustrated. You think I got a big severance package? Don't I wish? You and me, we screw up on a job like that, we get fired, and we're lucky to get another job for a while after that. But, you know, those people, they get fired, and they get, here's $42 million. You get a lousy job.
Man, you suck. Get out of here. Here's your check.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, Joe, good talking to you, brother. I've got a couple that are stacked up here. But don't be such a stranger, and I hope the test goes well.
Yeah, thank you, Bob, and I'm glad I was able to call in. And I'm sorry for not calling in and being more of a presence, because I'm just trying to get my stuff together.
Hey, right, focus, man, focus.
Right, and I'll probably call in on Thursday or Friday once the test is over and let everybody know what's going on.
Okay, cool. We have all the confidence in the world that you'll get a gold star from the teacher.
I've got no doubt about that myself. It's fairly simple stuff. Thanks again. I want to say hi to everybody in the chat room and say hi to Agnes for me, and keep things flying, and I'll be listening in.
Okay, good deal. Talk to you later, and like I said, knock them dead on the test.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
We're all rooting for you. See you, Joe. Joe Vecchio, formerly of the Cup of Joe radio show, and at some point he will be back with the Cup of Joe radio show, and hopefully sooner rather than later. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, this is Sarge. How you doing?
Hey, Sarge, what's up?
Oh, just calling and thought I would bring up a little fact. I heard that little statement about pull yourself up by the bootstraps and
right.
That mentality. And,
yeah.
You know, I've only got experience in the Air Force and the Navy, and I wore boots in both of those. And, you know, for the life of me, I can't remember bootstraps being designed to do anything but lace up boots. So if you pull on them to try and pull yourself up, you're going to fall on your ass. So that statement doesn't even make sense when they use it. So it's another one of those stupid statements they make. But one thing I did note, and I think is important, there's a little quote here. Fascism, which was not afraid to call itself reactionary, does not hesitate to call itself illiberal and anti-liberal. And, of course, that statement was made by one Mussolini.
Yeah, Benito Mussolini. How did I know?
Yeah, and so
the same guy who said,
telling
us. Yeah, that's the same guy who said fascism should more properly be called corporatism because it is the ultimate combination of the powers of the state and the powers of corporations.
Exactly, and you know this theme of, and I've heard it out here in Arizona, so it's not just a southern expression, although you hear it in the south frequently. We can't have the liberals in charge, you know. Excuse me, but you have just shown a little bit of fascism teaching there, my friend. And so the big thing, and you know this in the South, the big thing is that the media is extremely controlled. It has been since I was a little boy. I can remember being in the military when I first found out a lot of things about Martin Luther King that just frankly were not mentioned on the local TV stations, radio stations in Mississippi. But that's changing, too, because we do, we have had a progressive voice in the state of Mississippi. We've broadcast over a terrestrial station there. So it can happen, and it is happening.
Yeah, it is. It's a matter of staying alive. I mean, we had a report from Kate about Bryce there, I guess a week or so ago. And the ongoing struggles that he has just to stay on the air.
That's right.
Yeah, and that, you know, the biggest hurdle that liberal or progressive, whatever you want to call it, radio has, isn't audience. It's not audience participation. It's not listenership. The biggest problem liberal radio has, and it seems to be, I mean, I don't want to be talking out of school or anything, but I know it's true of us. And I'm pretty sure Air America has a tough time, and probably to one extent or another Nova M. The biggest problem any of these organizations have is getting the bucks to keep it going.
Exactly. And there are those forces out there who fight against the sponsors who are solicited, you know, and that's a problem that you have. You know that. I don't have to tell you that. You know it better than I do. But, you know, it's one of those situations where it's slowly happening and we've just got to be patient. But there is an awakening, I know at least in the Mississippi, Gulf Coast, and the people down there are so fed up with the, BS that goes on. And they're looking elsewhere, you know, and looking away from these Republicans. That's why you have Ronnie Musgrove doing one heck of a good job of putting the pressures on Wicker. And so, you know, the thing is changing, but we can't expect it to change overnight. It's going to take a while, and it's going to take people like Bryce Phillips down there to make it happen. And it is happening.
Well, it is, and we'd all like to see it happen quicker. The fortunate thing out of all this, Sarge, is that the folks doing it, from Bryce to you to me to Mike to Guy James and John Fox, Mark Levine, is that we all have profound dedication to seeing this work. Now, and we've got beautiful audiences, exciting, energized, activist-oriented audiences. All we have to do now is just keep the lights on.
And it's a vast audience, age-wise, too. It's not just one age group. It's all age groups that's participating in this.
I know the Horn audience goes literally from 10-year-olds to 90-year-olds. And that's pretty stirring.
Yeah, it is. And, of course, we have to continue to keep driving home our message. And whatever option that's available to us. We can't just jump in there and say, well, the odds are too overwhelming. When you have Rush Limbaugh competing against Rush Limbaugh for ratings in certain areas, guess who's going to win?
Well, there you go. Or if Flush Flimball's on the 50,000-watt blowtorch signal, and you take somebody like a Malloy, although it's not the same time slot, and he's on a 5,000-watt flickering candle flame, that's not a level playing field. At that point, the ideas even have a hard time competing, and we know that because with people like Malloy, when Malloy was on WLS in Chicago, he owned the night.
Yeah, Randy Rhoads, in the markets that she's competed against Rush Limbaugh, she's actually held her own or surpassed him. So, you know, the old claim that there's no audience for it, that's about as felonious as pulling themselves up by the bootstraps, you know. But it's really discouraging when we forget this thing can't be changed overnight. We can't expect Obama to be the instant cure all because he's got to work with what he has to work with, and it's going to take time. This thing has really been messed up tremendously
for a long, long time.
Thugs.
And let's bear in mind that just because. Well, I refuse to count any unhatched eggs, Sarge, and I imagine you're the same way. But assuming that Barack Obama gets into office, that doesn't mean that the fight's over. And it also doesn't mean that suddenly there's no need for liberal or progressive conversation or talk. Because we're going to have to process. See, the right wing takes marching orders. The left, the progressives, the liberals, the Democrats, the decent human beings, they actually think about stuff.
One thing you got to remember too is Obama himself said, "I depend on you to hold me to the fire," you know, to keep him informed. And we've got to remember that. We got to stay in touch with him and let him know. Hopefully he'll open up the White House, which I believe he will, to where we can have communications and not just this trash that we get these days, but we'll actually listen to the people. And looking at his fundraising thing, the people are a big part of how he's gathered his money. So I think we've got to be optimistic. We got to keep our voice out there. We can't give up.
Nope, never give up, never surrender.
And Bob, well, I'll let you go, and in spite of the Alabama comments, no, it's Southern Miss. Oh, guys.
Yeah, and you know, and I understand what Joe was saying, but, I don't think if the football teams collapse, the universities would go away. Now, it's true that.
No, I don't think so. Well, thank you, Bob. We'll talk.
All right. You. Take care, Sarge. Bye now. We love our alma maters. What can I say? If I had the ability during the show, I would send around something right now. Every now and then, my lovely, lovely wife likes to mess with my head during the show. And wow, did she just do it. My sweet, darling, beloved Agnes just walked into the studio a little bit ago, done up as Sarah Palin. You know, hair up to Jesus and all of that. And it scared me out of probably 3 years' growth. Yeah, I won't go into the more intimate ramifications of this, but suffice to say that, I don't know, I feel like I've just been dunked in ice-cold water. And I couldn't resist. I grabbed the digital camera and shot a couple of quick snaps and sent it around a little bit. I don't know if we can get those pictures up. And I don't know if Agnes wouldn't kill me if we did. But I apologize. Oh, it was disturbing. It was just really, really, really disturbing. So that's what that noise you may have heard. That maybe that
you know, gasping kind of scent. I don't know. It'd be like if I... No, I'm not going to do that because that's just too gross. But it involves a rubber George W. Bush mask. But I sent the photos out to John and Sue and a couple of other folks. Mark Levine just got the photo, and he wrote back. Mark did. And he said, that is really creepy. All it really requires is better glasses. Trust me, it was.
Well, Bob, that's the Democratic Sarah Palin.
There's no such thing.
Yes, we don't shoot Rudolph, and we believe in green jobs, and we want a better America. And we don't want to secede from America.
Well, we're going to do this again, and they're not going to be snapshots. We'll make them look a little bit more profound. And I mean, I love you, dear, and you're beautiful and everything. Don't do that to yourself.
Well, I can't see Russia from my front window.
And that's just fine. You know, I think you've got your Halloween costume, though. There's no doubt about that.
That hair. Oh, my God.
We'll get you some really, really snug-fitting camos and a toy rifle. And you can terrorize the entire neighborhood taking the kids out trick-or-treating.
Oh, thanks a lot. And by the way, not to change the subject, but this is really important. Hi, Sue. Welcome home. I love you, sis.
That is very important. So we'll take a little break as we begin the third hour. A few minutes ago, John Fox sent along a little something. The new single, it's been out for a couple of months, but... the new single, 8 years in the making, apparently. New single from AC/DC. And frankly, I don't know if it thematically fits as a bumper going out. I just kind of want to hear it and hope y'all do too. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob. And, well, you know how to get in touch with the show, and we'll be right back. Oh, yeah, like it already.
Yeah!
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fixed stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Cleaned up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right, somehow or another, we've got to get the photograph around to folks. I don't know. Shoot me an email or whatever. I'll try to do what I can, because the reviews are rolling in. I told you what Mark Levine said. Peter Godbold, our IT professional, former host of Strictly Confidential, which to this day still remains the most fabulous LGBT radio conversation radio program that has ever aired. Peter checked in. Well, I'm horrified, he says. She's too good at this. Totally creeped out. You should have it happen in the same room with you. Yeah, we'll. I don't know. We'll do this. Yeah, John Fox has seen them. He's equally horrified. I know. Here we are talking about pictures on the radio, dancing about architecture again. So, I don't know. John Fox. I saw them. Had to close the window. I was scared. You know what? Maybe that's the Halloween costume. What do you think? Agnes as Mussolini, and me in some sort of a Bullwinkle getup. I don't usually do Halloween, but this is almost too much to pass up. It's just scary. It's just scary. I don't know. Maybe, oh wow! What? I'm trying to think. Isn't there somewhere around here that's got a big concrete dinosaur? Take a picture of Agnes riding the big concrete dinosaur with an assault rifle in her hands. You know, one of those, I don't know, one of those AK-47s with a banana clip or something. And just, if we could just grow a little bit more, God only knows what we could accomplish. But we're doing pretty darn good for how we're going even now. Yeah, this... I don't know, maybe John and I need to get busy on a Sarah Palin video, parody tune. I was thinking just the other day, thinking back to the great pop hit from a few years back, Stacy's Mom. Oh, yeah. Thanks, Sue. Get the pics taken, Bob. My mind is spinning. It slow the spinning mind down a little bit. You're one day out of the hospital, honey. Slow down. You know, walk before running, please. Run before sprinting. Easy, slow and steady wins the race. But, yeah, but no, the other day I was thinking about Stacy's Mom has got it going on. Bristol's mom's a really big moron. Bristol's mom's a really big moron. It's got potential. I just don't know if we could, you know, John can pull off anything. John, can you pull off the imitation kind of Cars vibe that song had going for it? Oh, you people are just awful. Yeah, the picture of Agnes on the dinosaur holding a sign that says the copter's in the shop. Oh no, that was News Ninja Gene, I think. Too many messages rolling in here. Merciful God. Where was I going? Oh, well, there's always the phones. If you want to light them up, we got about 40 minutes or so of conversation left in the program. And if you haven't gotten your licks in so far, don't keep it bottled up. It's the first of the week, and that stuff can start to hurt after a while as the week goes on. And that, by the way, that was a very, very, thanks, John, that was a very, very cool, thanks for the recommendation. That was a very cool AC/DC tune. And I encourage people who are AC/DC fans to purchase the album when it comes out. And I think, what's the release date? The whole album's release date's maybe Saturday or some such. Okay. Yeah, see, the emails are beginning to roll in. Marty, photo? What photo? I'll email you the photo, Marty. And Gene and everyone else who's asked. I'll do a mass emailing. I had an email a little while back from our buddy Reverbo. Subject matter, look out below, referencing what I was talking about, the ruling class who ran Wall Street into the ground. Reverbo says, when the big boys would fall, used to be, we'd always get nicked or scraped. Now, thanks to years of repig-licking removal of all our protections, they fall directly on you. Yeah, it's all just a big Warner Brothers cartoon, and the repig-licking party has been transformed into the pianos falling on our heads. And we, of course, are Bugs Bunny. And yeah, it hurts, but you got to remember how Bugs treated that stuff. Remember when the opera snob came up and crammed his banjo over his head? First, Bugs says, music hater. But a little bit later, came and crunched his head in a harp, at which point he said, and this kind of goes in line with what Reverbo's been saying all along about make it personal. Bugs looks up with that inimitable look, and he says, you know, straight into the camera, of course you know this means war. So, yeah, they dropped Wall Street on our heads. But that's okay. We'll get ours. Time's coming. And if we have any brains about us whatsoever, we will run them to ground, and the repig-licking party will never threaten our future or our children again. That was Fountains of Wayne, John Fox. Fountains of Wayne, Stacy's Mom. And Lord knows it's still up at YouTube, the Rachel Hunter video and the homages to Lolita and Fast Times at Ridgemont High. So, I know I mentioned that story in the course of talking with Joe Vecchio. Fascinating thing. Now, after all this William Ayers business, after all the you know, little Klan rallies that the McCain campaign, you know, Lumpy McHoover and Winky Dink, Bull Winky, have been having mostly in the Midwest. Turns out just sort of turns out that John McCain's got a little terrorist problem, or at least, I mean, they said he was a terrorist, right? I mean, the brutal dictator who kills his own people, remember? Remember? And we didn't want, we had to go bomb the snot out of a bunch of people living in mud huts because we didn't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud. Remember all that the hateful, pernicious, gas bag garbage? Yeah, what I said in talking with Joe. And I want this to kind of sink in a little bit and not just happen in a passing conversation. William Timmons is the Washington lobbyist. Lobbyist, you know, the guys that John McCain says he doesn't have anything to do with. Huge Washington lobbyist that John McCain tapped to head his presidential transition team, which will hopefully be of no use and no need. And he was running an outfit that had a couple of lobbyists in it. And Timmons, William Timmons, worked very closely, intimately, shall we say, over a period of 5 years, day in, day out, on a lobbying scam that turned out to be criminal for Saddam Hussein. Started in 1992, not 1968, not when John McCain was 8 years old, but 1992. Let's see, 72, 8 minus 2, 6, 7, 66. When he was 56 years old. 1992, Timmons worked very closely with two lobbyists, Samir Vincent and Tong Soon Park, on a previously unreported prospective deal with the Iraqis in which they hoped to be awarded a contract to purchase and resell, oh my God, here it is again, Iraqi oil. So, Timmons and Vincent and Park cut a deal that would have given them each a share of $45 million if the deal went down. It was after the first Bush War, you know, Bush War I. And it was during the time when, yes, Washington deemed Iraq to be an enemy and the state sponsor of terrorism. And, of course, he was, the other two guys, Samir Vincent and Tong Soon Park, they either pleaded guilty or were convicted of federal criminal charges that they acted as unregistered agents of Saddam Hussein's government. And, of course, it was a brutal dictatorship, remember, so Saddam Hussein's government means Saddam Hussein. And John McCain didn't attend a coffee klatch with this guy, like I said, 8 or 10 years ago. John McCain wants this creepy old bastard to be the guy who sets up his administration if lightning should strike and this vicious old psychopath should become president of the United States. How do you reckon all those red meat eating racist thugs attending these little Klan rallies in the Midwest, how do you reckon they'd respond if Mussolini stood up and said, what would you think of a man who has for the leader of his transition team a Washington lobbyist who actively did business with Saddam Hussein? Lord God, those Nuremberg pitchfork and torchers would be screaming, kill him, lynch him, hang him. Oh, wait a minute, don't you know, you betcha. That's John McCain I'm talking about. Oh, yay, God bless America, everybody sing.
And I'm proud to be an American, where John McCain hires people who work for Saddam Hussein.
I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. Let's see. Timmons, actually, by the way, it wasn't like, well, you know, I mean, I had there with these two lobbyists and I knew them and, you know, we played tennis or squash or handball or whatever. No, no. Timmons wrote the talking points for these two creepy lobbyists that urged for an easing of the sanctions against Iraq. And they were reviewed ahead of time by Tariq Aziz. No, really. And these proposals that Timmons wrote and circulated, he wrote them in concord and collegiality and with the full knowledge and help of officials of Saddam Hussein's government. The oil deal was to be measured in millions upon millions upon tens of millions of dollars. That's the guy who would be in charge of setting up the transition into a McCain administration. Really. Now, you tell me, who's creepier? John McCain, who gladly sits down and backslaps, pours a glass of single malt or whatever, you know, maybe some really expensive 100-year-old Lagavulin or what have you, with this guy, or Barack Obama, who occupied space on the same planet with a guy named William Ayers. You tell me. It's up to you. Will we hear about this? Will we hear about this in the for-profit media? On a channel perhaps outside of MSNBC? My money says no. And then, of course, there's this latest statement from Mussolini that says she's attacking Barack Obama because she's got nothing to lose. Who did she say it to? Why, of course, that dirty old OxyContin junkie himself. Flush Flimball. You want to hear some excellence in broadcasting? Here it comes. Not.
As I listen to your campaign appearances and Senator McCain's, it seems that you are the more forceful in speaking out against Obama and his campaign ideas. Are they giving you pretty much free rein to attack this campaign as you wish?
Well, you know, there just aren't enough hours in the day. I've got nothing to lose in this, and I think America has everything to gain by understanding the differences, the contrasts here between Obama and McCain. So, you know, I'm going out there, and I'm just simply speaking, so be it that I'm a simple talker, but I'm just going out there and letting people know the differences.
Simple talker? No, honey, you're a simple liar. Does she have nothing to lose? Is that the benchmark of American politics now? You can do any sleazy thing you want because you have nothing to lose by doing it? Really? Isn't so what? This is kamikaze politics now? Now it's beginning to come out, of course, in Alaska that, you know, Sarah doesn't think too much of her darker-skinned population there either. The white lady that she appointed to be one of her bureaucratic offices quit today and said, you know, it really should be filled by a native Alaskan. Yeah. And then, of course, there are organizations of African Americans in Alaska who are beginning to speak out saying, you know, Sarah Palin doesn't give a rat's rear end about us. And you know what? They're right. She's a ripig-licking. And she's the worst kind. She's the hardest, weirdest right wing of the ripig-lickings. She has direct associations with the secessionist movement in Alaska. She really, really does. So, as compared with maybe being Vice President of the United States and a profound likelihood that she will ascend to the presidency when Lumpy McHoover shuffles off this mortal coil and goes to his long home, I guess she's telling the truth. She doesn't have anything to lose. She damned well may be facing impeachment if she goes back to the governor's office in Juneau. So she may as well, you know, don't, as the, okay, go back to another little sports analogy. She may feel like she's got, you know, don't leave anything on the field. Play it all. So I guess that means we're going to go from here to the fourth day of November with a steady onslaught of race baiting, fear mongering, and outright incitement to riot at these hateful little get-togethers that she's having all over the Midwest. And it is sickening. And it is discouraging and depressing. And the only remedy to it is to end her political ambitions at once with a crushing defeat. A crushing defeat. And that's why, like I said, I may be a little late getting in behind the microphone tomorrow. Because we're going to have a little meeting here about trying to work up some support for Barack Obama on this side of the river in this county. There is too much at stake to stay home. There is too much at stake to expect someone else to do the work. There's too much at stake to say, I'll do it next time. And so many of you know it so well. I get the emails from you. You're doing whatever you can. You're putting yard signs out. You're passing yard signs out. You're phone banking. You're calling around your own state or other states. You're giving of your time. You're giving of your time to try to make America a better place. A fit place for our future. And for that, I say, personally, as a parent, as someone who's concerned about that future, I say thank you. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Now, okay, here's the other side of the coin. Mark Levine sent me this link. It's off of MSNBC, a story from NBC. NBC's Mike Mimoli. Pick one. Datelined St. Clairsville, Ohio, referring to vice presidential candidate Joe Biden, you know, the intelligent vice presidential candidate. He writes, Biden was campaigning in Ohio but had West Virginia on his mind late this afternoon, making a bold promise to win a state that has gone ripig-licking in the last two elections. Biden asked the crowd at Ohio University Eastern Campus, about 10 miles west of the border with the West Virginia border with Ohio. He asked them, which way is West by God Virginia? I want to send a message to West Virginia. We're going to win West Virginia. We're going to shock the living devil out of y'all. It won't shock me that much.
This state was primed, I mean primed, to absolutely bury John McCain had Hillary Clinton been the nominee. In this instance, it is merely a matter of bringing those Hillary voters around to voting for Obama, and I think we can do it. I think we can do it. Now, the other side of it, and I'm going to the phone right quick, just in a matter of seconds, so please stay there. The other side of it is the other thing that Joe Biden said today. Quote, we can provide clean coal technology, not only exporting that technology and our coal, we can sell that technology, creating jobs. Ladies and gentlemen, what have great presidents always done? They've seen a problem and turned it into an opportunity. This should be a win-win for us if we just get off of being so beholden to big oil. Joe, I respect you immensely. And one of the things I respect about you, Senator Biden, is the fact that you are willing to admit when you've made a mistake, and in this one, you've made a doozy. Big Oil owns 70% of the coal companies that extract coal from these hills here in Appalachia. Learn it and know it for the truth that it is. And Senator Biden, and the same applies to Senator Obama, I'll thank you very kindly. I'm voting for you. But I will thank you very kindly not to utter that hateful, malevolent, malignant, poisonous phrase, clean coal. Do not let it pass your lips. Do not let it, yea, verily, even get past your teeth or out of your voice box until you have seen what some of us have seen. Don't do it, fellas, until you have flown over. Just follow the route. Just follow Route 3 westward from Beckley down into the Coal River Valley. Fly over Marsh Fork Elementary School and see the 2.8 billion gallons of carcinogenic filth that hangs over the head of little children as they attempt to learn. And befouls not only the place where they try to learn, but their very beings themselves. Fly over the former location of Marsh Fork High School and look up on the ridge and see the mountaintop removal job that is barely hidden from view from the road, where you can see the denuded hilt ridgeline. And know that hell on earth is yawning wide, just out of sight. Know what it does to the communities. Know what it has done to once vibrant little towns like Whitesville. Don't talk to me about clean coal, gentlemen, until you have seen what so-called clean coal does. Do not talk about clean coal, gentlemen, until you realize that as long as you get it the way we get it, it can never, ever, ever, ever be clean. The one hope I have is that these gentlemen may be reached with intellect and may be reached with reason and common sense. And they may, in fact, come to learn that hillbillies are Americans, too, and not simply fodder for America's insatiable lust for more carbon-based filth to pump into our world. It gets to everyone because you're all downstream and we are all downwind. But the greatest concentration of its hateful, bilious, vile nature falls straight on Appalachia. So, straighten up, Joe. Fly right, brother. We'll give you West Virginia. But 80% of West Virginia detests mountaintop removal, and we want something in return for our damn votes. We square on that, Senator? Good. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Well, hey, Luke, I was thinking about you earlier today because I saw a little story out of Elizabethton that I just knew probably had you running around the room.
Which one?
The Red Cross worker.
It was reported over at WBIR.
Uh-oh. I missed the news this evening. I'm proud I didn't get back in the end this evening until after 7:30.
Well, I kind of saved this in the hopes that I would hear from you.
Uh-oh.
A new father has secretly named his baby girl Sarah McCain Palin.
Yeah, I saw that one on the web. I was like, okay, yeah, thank you. Did you see the other story that was in our state's news that a lady who is 100 years old decided to vote her first election?
No.
Yeah, but I think it's over around David's area, around Nashville, where this lady is an African-American lady, and she decided that since it was Barack Obama, she was going to vote. It's the first time she's ever voted. She's 100 years old.
Dadgum. Somehow or another, that just makes the patriotic music play in my little internal monologue. You know what I mean?
Oh, I tell you. Oh, a story I saw, and I think I sent it to you. Wasn't it amazing last week, I guess, really, is when they were pushing it. When you saw all the people at Fox News was all up in arms because they had this Newsweek cover of Sarah Palin's face. They said, oh, it's awful. They came in there so close on her, you could see all the pores.
You can see wrinkles and the phrase I loved was, you can see wrinkles and unwanted hairs.
Yeah. Well, the thing that got to me was, I think I sent it to you from NewsHounds, was, isn't this the same Fox News that about 6 weeks ago taking pictures of the New York Times reporters and photoshopping them and telling people this is the way these people really looked, where they had elongated their noses and doubled the size of their ears?
Same bunch. Yeah I haven't seen that kind of photographic smear job since the close of the Third Reich.
Oh, I tell you what. Well, the one it reminded me of was, which one was it? Was it Time? That was it in the 90s when they did that negative that picture, and they did it like a negative.
Oh, yeah.
You know, things like that. It's like, guys, come on. If you're going to do this, at least put something up there explaining what you're doing. You know, but, oh, gosh. Oh, but they were on there tonight. How did you one thing we haven't heard nationally is one of the Senate races was the Franken-Coleman race.
Yeah.
Did you see the story about Suitgate?
Oh, yeah. I've followed a little bit of Suitgate. Apparently, Norm Coleman can't be brought to buy his own clothing.
Well, apparently, it's like, say, he's figured out, well, he can't accept cash, so he's apparently on the barter system, you know. It's like, no, I don't accept cash from anybody, but Norm, you accept everything else from them. You're even accepting your clothes from other people. I mean, you know, it's sort of like, well, we're going to take you down to this place, and we're going to get you a few suits. You know, by the time you're done, well, there's a $10,000 donation. That doesn't show up as a donation. Hallelujah. You know. And they've been asking about that. Apparently, he quit answering questions about it. What was it? He said he would not respond to bloggers' comments. Oh, he's, let's put it this way. Al, I think, is probably running a fairly good race, but he's got a secret weapon, Norm. You know. Apparently, Norm's only about people. The more Norm talks, the more Norm shouldn't talk.
Yeah, there are. Well, I was looking through. Mark Levine and I were having an email debate last night, and I seem to remember something out of Proverbs, and I went and looked. It's like Proverbs 17:31, and it says something along the lines, Luke, of even a fool is deemed a wise man when he keepeth his big fat mouth shut.
Well, the one I remember was...
That's Norm Coleman.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the one I used to remember was, people may think you have no intelligence. You open your mouth, you prove them right. You know?
No, I think that Southernism is taken directly from this line verse out of Proverbs, because, better to be silent and thought a fool than to open one's mouth and prove it.
That was it. Open your mouth and remove all doubt. That's it.
That's the one.
You know, it's just amazing. One thing you've been talking about, and I tell you one thing everybody needs to remember now. All this stuff we're hearing on the national, that's nice. It's good to hear that, you know, they're telling us Obama's up by such and such in each state. Just remember now, he's not the only one on the ticket. You've got senators. You've got congressmen. You've got a good chance with the turnout this time of maybe turning out your congressman or turning out your senator. You know, I still think there's going to be some that's going to get turned out, but they ain't expecting to get turned out. that if enough people show up and vote for Obama and vote down the Democratic line, that we could get a couple people in that they ain't even expecting to get in.
And you know the one I want, and Mark Levine referenced this earlier this evening, Luke. The one I want to see, and I want to see a big Senate majority, because I really want to tell these Republicans to sit down and shut up, and be able to put some force behind it. I want to see Mitch McConnell go down, and it's looking like there's a real chance of that happening.
But you know who the Democratic senatorial campaign spends some money on, and I hadn't realized this one. And I can't think of what the fellow's name is running against him, but we may be saying goodbye to some fellow named Zach Spachambliss.
That'd be just fine by me. Now, I got to tell you, I have some misgivings. There's a character running in South Carolina.
Uh-oh.
And he's running against Lindsey Graham,
the
biggest open closet story in Washington, D.C. He's running against Lindsey Graham. And it turns out this clown is actually, well, first of all, the people sort of started looking around going, what? Huh? What?
How did he get on the ballot?
Yeah, when he came out and said that he thought it was the height of egotism to assume that global warming was man-made.
Oh, well, you know how it is.
And I saw a picture of him, and he's standing there, and I think of John Teaster from Montana.
Oh.
Who's a pretty good guy.
I was going to say, looks sort of like a fullback from the football team.
Yeah, he's got that Bart Starr haircut going for him.
Yeah.
You know, the old Bart Starr haircut. You know,
helmet was way too tight.
Yeah. Well, this guy looks like that.
Oh, gosh.
And lo and behold, he said, well, you know, as an engineer, I know we deal with fluctuations all the time because I'm an engineer. And as an engineer, I know that man can't possibly be responsible for global warming. Well, it turns out the guy was a Republican until about, 6 months ago.
I was going to say, is he a trained engineer or what?
Yeah, he didn't show up with his little striped hat on or anything, but yeah, he was a Republican until about 6 months ago when he decided he wanted to be a senator, and the way to do that was to jump on, you know, he's a bandwagoner.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know how it is. It's one of those things. There are some states down here or in the South where you know how it is. If they say they're a Democrat, look into their history, because they may be with a Democrat in name only and barely that. You know how it is.
And you're gonna have some of that in the South.
Oh yeah.
And the Midwest and the right.
But more in the South than anywhere else. You know what I mean? As an average. You know how it is. It's one of those things. You just have
right to... because the operative word isn't repig licking or Democrat. It's I'm a Southern conservative.
Yep. And you know how it is. That'll slip by anybody, but. But like you were saying, the thing with Mitch McConnell, I'd like that. I think that's just so nice because we could pay him back and say, you know, George, were you real happy when you went up to North Dakota and campaigned against the head of the House a few years ago? Well, isn't this nice?
Maybe coming back to bite.
That's what I mean. You know, it's like the same thing with Saxby. It's like, Saxby, you ran the dirtiest campaign that we've had in a few years. It's nice to say goodbye to you, we hope, we pray.
Yeah, Saxby ran the nastiest campaign since Andy Jackson's opponents accused his wife of being a bigamist.
Oh, I tell you. That's one of them ones, like I say, you know good well he had security, but it is one of them ones I almost want to get in the car and go down there and slap him myself. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, there's limits. I mean, you know, I understand you call your opponent names and all that.
But this is a guy who went away with, what, no limbs? Three limbs left in Vietnam?
Uh-huh.
And you morph his face into Osama bin Laden's? Man, that takes some brass.
Oh, well, remember now, these are the same people that elected Sonny Perdue.
Yeah, Sonny, I call the weatherman before I pray for rain Perdue.
Uh-huh. You know, it's old Sonny, and I still think someday that flag's going to get him. It's going to get him good. Oh, you know, it's one of those things that on some of these nowadays, when we see these races, you're just kind of sitting there going, huh? You know? but you know, it's like I said, we got to make sure everybody turns out. Don't think just because there's a 10-point advantage in your state, your vote ain't needed. You know what I mean? If they tell you that Obama's up by 10%, well, you're part of that 10%. You better show up. Don't just think somebody else can go do it.
Absolutely.
That's your responsibility. You got to show up and remember there's other people on that ballot. Make sure what you're voting for. You know, it's one of those things. Like I said, I think there's maybe not as many senators, but I think there's quite a few House people that could get turned out. They ain't expecting it, because if we get enough people turned out for Obama, while you're there, just go down there and flick that Democrat button on that House race.
Yeah, there may actually be states where just hitting that, just hitting that straight ticket thing's just fine.
Yeah. I mean, check it out.
And look, you know, I personally don't believe that some southern states are out of reach. You know, Sarge was talking about Mississippi earlier.
Yep.
That could happen. There's a good, am I mistaken? There's a solid senatorial candidate in Texas who's a Democrat. I can't remember his name right now offhand.
Well, I think the interesting one down this way right now probably is still going to be the Elizabeth Dole race over in North Carolina.
Yeah, Mark pointed out that she hasn't really made a name for herself there. She's kind of tired and crotchety, just like McCain.
Well, they've kind of attached the carpetbagger name to her. It's sort of like, you know, you're our senator, but isn't it true you used to live in Kansas most of the time? You know.
And isn't it true that you live in D.C. all the time?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to come home. You got to shake some babies and kiss some hands.
It's one of those things we understand. You were born here, but you ain't lived here in a while. You know, it's like the old thing was with George H.W. It's like, it's nice to call yourself a Texan, but when you own a quarter lot on something big enough to put a photo mat on, that ain't being a Texan. You know.
No, I'm sure that horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner would patiently explain to us all that being a Texan in many instances involves, you know, wide open spaces and places where you can ride your horse and run your cattle, and I mean that's the image and the paradigm of right. And no, having a penthouse suite in Houston, not so much.
Now, that's like I say, I'm sorry, but the Bush family are Connecticut folk, and they have been in all of
yeah, because Maine won't claim them.
No.
And Connecticut, the nutmeggers aren't real happy about it either. But but you think Columbus is going to take them back? No, yeah. I told that story the other night. They got run out of Columbus over Prescott Bush's humiliating lie about saving Black Jack Pershing and Marshall Foch in one fell swoop.
Well, you know how that is. It's like saying, I got to wonder whenever Neil comes to a town, does he have to notify the police he's in town? You know, I've really been wondering about that.
Well, I got a feeling that he at least notifies the hookers.
Well, that too is true. I bet you 10-1 somebody in the SEC keeps an eye on where he lives on a daily basis.
Yeah, and I don't think you mean Securities and Exchange Commission.
No, well, that too. But well, but I know you probably got some more people stacked up, so let me let you get on back here and talk to some other folks.
All right, take care, Luke. Good hearing from you.
Just to remind people, I don't know about most states, but in our state, tomorrow starts early voting.
Oh, wow. You going to early vote or you going to wait and do the thing on the day?
I wait till about like the 2 or 3 days from the end of early voting. You know what I mean? But it's like, say, folks, if you all are worried about somebody closing up your, you know, sitting in those long lines, that's what early voting is good for. You ain't got to go sit in a long line.
That's the truth. Yeah, I don't have to worry about that here, so.
I hope that people up in Ohio take real advantage of early voting.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because we know that, is Blackwell still in power?
No. They've got a Democratic Secretary of State in Ohio, and that's why the Repig-Lickin Party has been filing suit after suit after suit after suit, trying to keep people, once again, typical Repig-Lickin tactic, we don't want nobody voting in this here election, trying to keep people off the voting rolls in Ohio.
Well, we know what, you know, that thing, I wonder if they're going to try it in other states, you know, do what the Repig-Lickins up in Michigan were going to do. Challenge people because you've been foreclosed upon.
Right. That got nipped in the bud, though, fortunately.
But be careful. They'll be thinking about trying it in other states and wait till the last minute to do it.
Yep. So, yep, they will.
All right.
Well, Luke, take care.
You too.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye,
bye
now. All right. Well, tell you what. It's about 10 before the hour. Not really a good chance to get a good conversation started unless... You know, unless you got something to be under your bonnet, burr under your saddle, don't hesitate to pick up the phone and make use of it. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. You're more than welcome to chime in. Or on your own nickel, if you've got an unlimited dialing plan, something like that, 304-658-3333. Learn it, know it, use it. And for those of you who asked, I will send the Agnes as Sarah Palin snapshot around after the program. So you can see what it was that was just severely messing with my head. I mean, I about jumped out. I did one of those W.C. Fields triple takes. And then one of those. The story, I guess this is an appropriate little kicker to close things up with this evening. Like I said, out of WBIR, Knoxville, Tennessee, this character named Mike Siptak from Elizabethton, Tennessee. I assume it's Elizabethton, Tennessee, or Elizabethton. Hard to tell. There's an Elizabethtown, Kentucky, but this ain't that. I assume that it would appear that his wife was in recovery, having just delivered their beautiful baby daughter. And he snuck in, really, real skullduggery here, secretly named the baby girl Sarah McCain Palin. Siptak, I guess. He surreptitiously put that name on the documents for the filing of the poor little infant's birth certificate. This really is kind of sleazy, because he and his wife, apparently, had previously, knowing that it was going to be a precious little girl, had settled upon the name Ava Grace. It's a lovely name. So what is it? Welcome Grace? Ava Grace? Maybe after Ava Gardner and Grace Kelly, maybe they're movie buffs? I don't know. But it's a pretty name. Ava Grace Siptak. But no, the poor child is saddled now with Sarah McCain Palin Siptak. That kid is not going to have a minute's peace through her entire school career. I don't know, maybe they'll call her Lumpy later. I hope they don't. Or Mussolini, or... What gets into the minds of parents? Yeah, and what was it? Gwyneth Paltrow, who named her kid Apple? Jesus. Mark Siptak, who apparently doesn't plan on being married much longer, gave a statement to the Kingsport Times News of Kingsport, Tennessee, for a story that was going to be published today. He said, "I don't think she believes me yet. It's going to take some more convincing," talking about his wife. And then in typical Repiglican fashion, he said, "I took one for the cause. I can't give a lot of financial support for the campaign. I do have a sign up in my yard, but I can do very little. So I hung a really stupid name on my daughter. I took one for the cause." That's the way it is with Repiglicans. That's all they can think about is I. I took one. No, you made your little precious days-old infant daughter take one for the team. Lord a mercy. He said he named the child after John McCain and Sarah Palin to, quote, get the word out about the campaign. Hey, Mark, buddy. Everybody pretty much knows who's running for president. And what's more, apart from weird little wingnuts like yourself, we know what the right decision is, too. God, I hope it's not a time-consuming process to change a baby's name. And I hope they're straight with the baby, you know, because when the kid gets old enough, she's... Mama, Daddy, was I adopted? I found some court documents says my first name... My birth name was Sarah McCain Palin. Am I some sort of weird love child between that right-wing fundamentalist who got her gut stomped out in the 2008 election and the presidential candidate that had that big old lump on his face? That old fella? Mama, Daddy, am I adopted? And that's when Mama has to look up and say, "Well, no, honey. See,
the guy you've been calling daddy all along, well, he's not your biological father. Your biological father was a creep named Mark Siptak, who snuck off and named you after he and I agreed on what your name would be, Ava Grace. But that's okay, because he's not around anymore, because I have a .45 and a shovel, and no one has missed him. People. People, people, people. Reminds me back when I used to watch the hippy-dippy painter on public television, and he'd do this beautiful landscape piece of art in the course of 30 minutes or so. One day he was sitting there painting along, and he works with those little knives and those little brushes, and he talks, and I guess he's gone now, and that's kind of sad. It is sad. I think he was a force for good. But he's, you know, sort of whispers as he's talking. He says, and we're going to put a little happy tree here, and we're going to put a happy little rock over here. And maybe behind that rock there's a little squirrel, and he's scratching his head with his little paws saying, crazy people. Apparently, long ago, that little squirrel behind the rock, the imaginary squirrel behind the imaginary rock in the painting, was able to look into the future and find Mark Siptak of Elizabethton, Tennessee. Holy smokes. So that's the program. Another little reminder. I'll be late to the microphone tomorrow night, but I'll find a way for us to have a show one way or the other, if that's all right by y'all. And that's an advance warning to Ben Birch, too, that the archive will be screwed up. Yeah, I know, Ben. I'm sorry. I'll make it up to you somehow. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org, working every day to save not just the Appalachians from mountaintop removal, but people thousands of miles away who do not even know the work they do. Amazing. We thank them profoundly for their partial sponsorship of everything that happens on the Horn. Thanks also go out to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, and to John Fox, our audio engineer and webmaster. Thanks to all our news ninjas, our bloggers. Thanks to ELO, Sue, the den mother, the uber moderator of the headonradionetwork.com chat room. We're so happy that you're home from the hospital and on the mend. We've missed you terribly, you know. Thanks to all of you who, through your efforts, and no matter how difficult it is, do your part to keep the Horn on the air, either by your contributions at headonradionetwork.com or by your mail contributions to the P.O. Box in Beckley. Shoot me an email if you need the snail mail address, and I'll send it to you, and it can stay in your inbox. You're making independent, live, liberal, progressive conversation radio possible. Thank you for listening, emailing, calling. Truly, you all do confer upon all of us at the Horn a tremendous privilege.